Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
I have a question for Dr. Francis Cress-Wilson. On a job, I've been subjugated to white harassment, which involved me and another white woman. I go by a code of conduct when it comes to dealing with white folks, and I minimize my contact with them. I don't speak to them, and the company that I work for does service for the hotel that she just so happened to work for, and when she tried to speak to me, I would ignore her, and I wouldn't talk to her or anything, and I would just grab the papers and go on with my day. And I've noticed that, you know, there are consequences when it comes to ignoring white women on the job. And I got news from the VP of the hotel that they had contacted my manager, saying that I was harassing her because I was ignoring her. I wasn't following proper job procedures or anything like that. And what I've noticed is that when I was outside of my booth, she tried to come speak to me again, and I just kept ignoring her. I wasn't talking to her or anything like that. And her boyfriend said, "Hey, black effer," like, "Hey, black mother effer," like, you know, I think that was his way of trying to get my attention. So I laughed, and I continued on ignoring him, and also her. And I noticed how he went on the inside of the hotel and tried to pick a fight with my black coworker, who was just so happened to be African at the front desk. So they called security on him. And she got frustrated, and she told me, "Well, you should be happy a woman of my status is trying to speak to you anyway." I have a question. Is there anything that I did wrong? Is there another way I should have handled the situation? Do you have any input on it?
I would just suggest, and correct me if I didn't hear you totally. You see, I think that start out in terms of attempting to be courteous and respectful at all times, you know, to the extent
it's
that
it's hard, though. It's very hard, you know what I'm saying?
See, sometimes white females want to insist that a black male give them attention. And they are, and I'm not saying give the female any attention beyond being professional and polite. Do you see what I'm saying? And
yeah.
You may have to give, you know, sit down with your manager and say the person is being demanding, or that I relate to them. Are there guidelines that you would like to give me about how I can conduct myself in a professional way? Do you see, I don't date people on the job if that is what the issue is. But sometimes they can be very provoking. I had a situation where a young black man in Boston. He was working in Senator Kennedy's office, and a white female would constantly come by his desk and touch him. And he said, "Dr. Welsing, how should I handle it?" And I said, "You can say that, you know, really this is sexual harassment." And her response was, "Who are you going to tell? Who will they believe, you or me?" Do you see what I'm saying? So that whole thing of trying to, whether she's trying to get her white boyfriend to have a response that I will protect you from this black monster, you see, but I would start out saying in the workplace, you know, try to have conduct that is professional in relationship to other coworkers. In other words, you may have an idea about what racism, white supremacy is, but in terms of your performing in your work setting, you know, so then I'm going to be rude and disrespectful. I would say don't use that approach. If you can, you know, be polite and courteous, but that doesn't mean, you know, laughing and grinning and, you know, well, don't you date? Don't, you know, a number of black males have said, white females have said to them, "Oh, you're not interested in white females? Or don't you date white females?" Do you see where the person is honest and they might answer, "No, I do not. Thank you very much. No, I do not." Do you see? But if somebody is attempting to be provocative, you may have to resort to speaking to a supervisor. Please tell me how I can handle this situation. You see, I am being polite and courteous and doing my job in relationship to this person, but I would prefer to not have all of this extra attention. Does that make any sense to you?
That makes perfect sense. I also want to add is that I completely appreciate all the things that you've done throughout the years, and I consider you Neely Fuller's Mr. Neely Fuller's partner in justice. And I just appreciate everything that you've done.
Context of white supremacy. Always at least a good start to begin with the voice of Dr. Frances Cress Welsing. She spoke about workplace racism many times through the years, her visits to the COWS, Context of White Supremacy. Again, this is our weekly Thursday broadcast, Workplace Racism, every Thursday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central, 5 p.m. Pacific. If you would like to dial in, if we have black entrepreneurs, if we have black people who have figured out, hey, this is what to do so that you have no struggles on your job. You go in, you work your hours, you get your promotions, you get your raises, and you never have a moment of conflict, strife. You move right on up the corporate ladder. As long as you want to hang out there, no issues. You should be the first folks to dial in if we have any listeners, black listeners, who have got themselves in that position. If you're self-employed and you are rolling, you don't have any problems, you don't have any white people that work for you, or you have figured out if you have white clients that you serve, you have figured out how to deal with them and neutralize any of their attempted racist activity, dial in the number 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. Press *6 if you would like to participate. Number again, 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. press star 6 if you would like to participate. Again, if you do not, if you're not able or you just don't want to call in via phone, you can share your thoughts, observations via email. My email, untiljustice@gmail.com. untiljustice@gmail.com. If you drop me an email, we can read. If you have a situation that you want to share and get feedback from listeners, if you have commentary on any of the things that are shared over the course of the broadcast, just whatever you would like to share with us, you can keep it anonymous. Just drop an email, untiljustice@gmail.com, and I'll keep an eye on my mail as we proceed through the broadcast. Again, I want to encourage folks, this is not a spectator broadcast. This is not something where you just wait for Thursday. Now it's warm. I can, you know, kick back, go sit outside on the porch every Thursday and look forward to hearing the black people and whatever miseries they are going through on their job and just kick my feet up and maybe listen while I'm enjoying my evening supper. That is not what this is designed for at all. Black people, Dr. Welsing used to say this regularly. Black people, it should be impossible to get five black people together where you cannot have a lengthy, hours-long conversation about how those five black people are experiencing white supremacy, racism, on their job. I think it's very important reflecting, reviewing your work history, maybe looking back at incidents that happened previously when you were more confused about racism, white supremacy, and now with a better understanding, you can look back and kind of see how racism was being practiced against you or how racism was involved in a particular situation. I think that's helpful. We certainly have younger listeners who do not have extensive work histories. I know they and others appreciate being able to hear about different situations. It kind of helps us be on the lookout to know what type of things that we should prepare for, plan for, that we can expect from racists. And I also think it's just very helpful to be able to see some of the similar patterns in terms of the same types of things that racists carry out in workplace settings. Very, very important. I hope folks benefit from the sharing. In that vein, some of the folks who wrote in already to share commentary, people who emailed commentary in, I want to read a few at the beginning and then I'll try and sprinkle in the rest as we proceed. So number one, person wrote in, they said, I've recently been sent to another job location with the same company. Before going, the supervisor told me who to report to when I get there. By his last name, it appears that he is a non-white Hispanic male. So when I arrived at the job, the non-white Hispanic male asked me how the racist supervisor was. I responded, last that I saw him, he was in good health. The non-white Hispanic male gave me a strange smirk and walked away. From some of the previous programs on workplace racism and my own experience with Hispanics, they often try to identify as white. I believe he asked me that question to see if I will gossip about the other supervisor. I noticed that the very same pattern of questions comes from other suspected racists on previous jobs. Second incident. While on this job, there's a suspected racist that appears to be in his mid-60s, and for the last week he just stares at me and doesn't speak much, but he just stares. So I made it my duty to watch him very closely. So one day, while it was slow, I had the machine turned to the back so that the back was facing him, but the machine has a side mirror so I can see him very well. Within a couple of minutes, he came creeping alongside the machine. I then said abruptly, "Can I help you with something?" His response was, "I was trying to sneak up on you." I asked him, why would he want to sneak up on me? He had no response and left. With that encounter, and by his constant staring, I've started to wonder about his sexuality. My doubt was confirmed on our next encounter. He came to me and said, "You have to take the bucket off the machine and put the, I'll say penis, but that's not what he wrote." I said the extension correct. He said, "No, I call it a penis, but that's not what is in quotes what this racist said. You black guys don't have problems with penises. That's not what he said. I said, I can't speak for all black guys, but I do. So I put the extension on and every racist suspect made the gesture about their penis. Third incident. A suspected racist came to me and said, I'm really bad with names. So he re-asked me my name and I asked him his name. Again, we exchanged names. He pronounced my name clearly. I pronounced his name clearly. He then said, hey, do you mind if I call you D for short? I said, no, sir. You can call me the name that I told you I would like to be called. If any have suggestions or if you felt I handled these situations correctly, any information would be greatly appreciated. I'd say, number one, I think we talked about this name thing repeatedly, standard operating procedure, racists not respecting titles of black people. So either they mispronounce your name or they make up all these little nicknames and what have you. A lot of times they have secret little racist jokes where they're calling you D and you think that's, you know, maybe short for your name or whatever it is. And they're saying D is for dick, that's the black or whatever else, you know, it is. That's just how racists get down. So I am a huge advocate and I think it's an exercise in black self-respect when you're on jobs. I don't do nickname. I don't call anybody here, black people or white people. I don't call them any nicknames or make up any little funny little sayings or slogans that I'm just going to call this person every now and then. I call everybody here by their title, Mrs., Miss., Mr. in most cases. I know some people are in those, you know, jobs where they want people on a first name basis. That's fine, too. But just call people what they want to be called, and I expect the same in return. I think that's great, and I know we've had other people who've said that they do that every time, and you can do it courteously. You don't have to curse and do all that, but just, you know, I'd appreciate it if you would call me by my name every time. I'm just not into nicknames and things. I've seen where that can get really out of control in workplace environments, so I'd appreciate it if you call me by my name every time. Thank you kindly. Or you can, however you want to say it. The other incident, with the guy sneaking up on you, I think we've also had some other people, at least one other person that I can think of where whites were trying to sneak up on them at the job. And I think one white person that was doing this had like some combat training. I take all that stuff really serious on the job. Anytime where it's looking like whites are trying to make you the butt of some joke, excuse the pun, trying to make you the butt of some joke or coming in and just saying all of these racist and crude type of things, I would really be hard on the serious, conducting myself in a very serious manner. I'm not joking at any of these, what you call jokes, and just tacky commentary. I'm not joking, smiling about any of this. Again, being courteous, you speak to everybody. Morning, Bob. Morning, Ted. Morning, Helen. You speak to everybody, but I'm not into any of this behavior. I would make that very clear and be consistent about it. It's great that you were talking about the machine has a mirror on it so you can get a wider field of view so you can see what's happening around you, behind you, and what have you. If you've got all these type of things happening, I think we've encouraged before people to maybe have a mirror at your work area so you can see, because other people, like I said, have commented that whites, you know, come behind them and sneak up on them to hug them or some other, you know, just white supremacist terrorism. So I'm a big advocate of that. Staying in the question lane, why are you sneaking up on me? Is it something that I can help you with in terms of doing all of this? The person that wrote this said that you had maybe doubt, suspicions, maybe, you know, this is a race soldier who is making some sort of sexual advance. We talked about this in The Delectable Negro, right? White men's sexual attraction to black males absolutely could be. I would take that serious, too. And I would also monitor your personal space. Sounds like if he's sneaking up on you and that sort of thing, I would be real cautious about folks getting close to me and that sort of thing. And I would make that clear, too, that, you know, hey, I really try to be respectful of other people's personal space. We're here. We're doing our job. We're all working together. But, you know, I don't want people in my personal space. I don't want to be in your personal space if that sort of thing is happening, if they're trying to sneak up on you and touch you or anything of that nature. This person did ask if folks have suggestions or comments for these three different I guess, scenarios or situations. I always ascertain. I know the first incident you were talking about, the so-called Hispanic person and snitching. I think that is absolutely true. They will try to see if you will gossip or talk bad about someone else on the job, and then see if they can use that to brand you as being, oh, this person is disruptive and they're around here trashing our team members and we're a family and you're around here waiting until they turn around and then say something. So I think that's a great habit, great response. I don't have anything bad to say about anybody here. I would just assume they might be recording you. We talk all the time about having recording devices and that sort of thing. They might have you on camera making these comments. So I think that's a great move. And again, I just encourage folks, ascertain to the best that you can, is this person white? That's number one. And then even if they are a non-white person, you should not assume that this person is an ally or a friend of yours. You are behind enemy lines on the job. Many, many non-white people, victims of racism, are compromised and helping out racists directly on the job. So you just have to keep that in mind. United, independent, getting things done. I'll read one more and then we'll get to some of the folks who called in. Next person. They said maybe a few callers, this is a black female, maybe a few callers can provide some assistance in explaining why white employees like to infantilize other white employees. For instance, in my workplace, white employees' names are shortened to kiddie nicknames, like Susan will be turned into Susie, Matt will be turned into Maddie, Brad will be turned into Braddy, and so forth. This doesn't happen to black employees. I've seen a lot of nicknaming of black employees. Continuing, I have an issue with my workplace handbook. I noticed that I was accruing the wrong amount of PTO, paid time off. I asked Human Resources about it because in all three copies and formats that the handbook was given to us, it displayed a different PTO rate than I was getting, and HR simply said our company goes by a different rate than the parent company. We don't follow their handbook, all in quotes. I then asked for our company's handbook, and HR stated there wasn't one. Now, I spoke to our HR privately in person and did send emails to leave a paper trail. After speaking with HR, my manager sends a passive-aggressive broadcast email to everyone about PTO. I thought it was against the rules for HR to discuss private matters with other employees, as I did read the handbook, with which, come to find out, only applies to things that HR feels at the moment. Wowee, the tackiness of whites. Very important. That's what I said about reading your employee manual, because even when you find discrepancies like that, and that, you know, I'm not surprised about that at all, where you have something in the policy and they say, oh yeah, this is not our policy, or we updated it, or this is a brand new one. This is not even the policy for our company. This is the policy for our parent company. We have our own handbook and we're not going to make it available to you now. That is a level of tackiness that you would not know about unless you read your handbook. That's what very, very important. Now that you know how deep all of this goes, now you can make a better assessment of the situation and what you want to do moving forward. I think it's great. You said you, the person that wrote this, she said she was able to send emails with folks. So you have some electronic paper trail in terms of what people said, if they responded, if they didn't respond, dates, times, all of that. Great for all of this moving forward. Them not giving you a handbook, I would have a question about that, and that might even be one on an email. So are you telling me that it's not possible for me to get a copy of the actual handbook with all of the pertinent information about my job responsibilities? That might be one that I'd want to send via email, however you want to phrase it, the best way to put the question together. But that might be one that would be great to have, to get somebody saying, no, it's not possible for us to give you the accurate handbook with all the pertinent information you need so that you know correctly you can assess your PTO and any other info that you might need to do your job correctly. And I think, Matt, I think we talked about this maybe once or twice before. I know Human Resources, we talked about that, and even some of the listeners work in Human Resources. Man, I would assume, whether it's Human Resources, if it's a custodian, if they work for that company, I would just assume whatever you say, like I said earlier, that you're being recorded, that they've got a video recording device in their hat or their glasses or their contact lenses or their belt buckle or all of the above, or a recording device on their watch or their pen, and or they're going to take verbatim notes and hand them out to every single employee in the company. That's what I would assume every time you are at work and you open your mouth about anything, that nothing you say is going to be privileged, private, confidential information. I know Forbes, they have a section that's just on workplace, and they were talking about this, and they said the same thing. Any conversation you have, even if you're leaving, even if you're quitting, you hit the lottery and you got $5 billion and I'm quitting. I'm putting my 2 weeks notice and I'm out of here. They do your exit. And even that, I would assume, they're going to share that information, especially if you're a black person. So definitely, I would just have that in mind. Whatever the situation is, that white people, I think I've said that for years, white people network. And one of the primary things that white people talk about is their niggers. So I'm sure immediately, whoever it was at HR, let's go in and posse up with all the other whites. This nigger had the audacity to come in here and trying to get some extra nickels out of us. Now let's get this together and boom, boom, boom. And they just go to work and get things done. Other people wrote in with commentary. I'll read those as we go. If folks have commentary, because the first two people, they did ask, if listeners, if you have suggestions, ideas about how to deal with these situations that were mentioned, definitely dial in, share. If you have your own situation that you want to comment on, that's great as well. The number again, 641-715-3640. Code 564-943-pound. Press *6 if you would like to participate. Folks who dialed in with a hand up, if you would like to comment on what you've heard or if you have your own incident you would like to discuss, lines should be open. Feel free to chime in.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Greetings to you, the host, the callers, and the listeners. I wanted to comment about the different jobs that I've worked when I was inside of buildings with white people. A number of jobs that you work, you have to be inside of a building, and they always turn the temperature to something that, you know, will make black people even shiver. You'll get goosebumps, but you'll notice the white people, I don't think they have goosebumps, and they're not shivering anyway. And I was dating, a few years ago, I was dating a nurse, black lady, and she was telling me that, you know, she worked at night, and the temperature would be real low, and she would, you know, be texting me from work and just telling me that, you know, it's so cold over there, and they won't allow her to put her jacket on. They won't allow her to keep her heater on because she brought a little space heater, you know, so they really want to make sure that black people are uncomfortable, and they know about the exact temperature where you'll get goosebumps, and they know the exact temperature you'll start shaking. They know the exact body weight that you'll be at, and they know which genetics is going to be more susceptible to cold weather. I think they do that in every building they have, and it seems like most every building, if it's not their living dwelling, then it's somebody's workplace, and they always keep the temperatures to something that black people have a difficult time operating at. And my girlfriend at the time, she would tell me she can't put her jacket on, so her nipples would be exposed, and you know, when it gets cold, there's a change in that, and she was just saying it's you know, it's a little embarrassing not being able to cover, you know, just because of the rules. I was just mentioning that. I thought that was interesting. And I noticed that white people can't, they can't be in the same type of temperature we were in. So like if it was my work environment, my own job, I would raise the temperature to something that's comfortable to me. But I noticed white people get very hot very quickly in those environments. But that's all I wanted to mention. I do think that's workplace racism to intentionally keep the temperature lower than what we can tolerate. Thank you.
Now that is interesting. I've heard that talked about like recently, like this year, 2017. But it was not talked about talking about climates in work environments. It was not talked about in the context of racism. It was talked about in the context of the discomfort that white women face on the job, and saying that the temperature, the thermostat, is normally set at something so that white males who are wearing thick suits so that they can be comfortable, particularly in the summertime, as opposed to white women who would be wearing something lighter, especially in the summertime, where they'll be exactly what you said, shivering, freezing cold, and nobody care. And then, like you said, to even add on, to have regulations where you're not allowed to have a space heater or a jacket, like that's a new one. I've never heard of a policy at a work environment where you can't have a jacket on in a cold environment. I don't know. I would have to at least ask about a sweater or something. A sweater is not quite the same as a jacket. I don't think I've ever been in a work environment where you couldn't have something to keep your body warm at some level. I don't know what harm a jacket is doing. But I think is absolutely true. I think racists do as much as they can to make our work environments uncomfortable so that, you know, we just cannot come in efficiently, do our job, and have a pleasant day at work. That is not what they're trying to do at all. Has your wife been able to do anything to try, or girlfriend, has she been able to do anything to mitigate this, or is she just having to suffer through being cold?
Well, this is a girlfriend I had a few years ago, and
right.
She was a nurse. But I don't think that she was able to change it, because I thought it was ridiculous too that she couldn't wear a jacket. But I think it had something to do with the uniform, and that the people were just being particularly nasty towards her. But no, I don't know that she's done anything to mitigate that.
Wow. Yeah, that is a brand new one. I've never heard of racists being that brutal in a workplace environment to just force people to be cold while they're for whatever their shift is going to be. But if folks have, if other people have had to deal with that or have suggestions around that, that would be great as well. Definitely appreciate you sharing, sir. If other people, if you either have comments on what you've heard thus far, suggestions, if you want to share your own situation, lines should be open. Feel free.
Have you heard?
Yes, sir.
Awesome. This is Ken Steele, and I'm reporting in from Los Angeles proper. And I just want to say that to the previous caller, I can concur. I've been in work environments that have been deliberately conditioned to be at lower temperatures. I've heard managers say that there's a belief that people work more effectively in colder temperatures, and it keeps people awake, as opposed to having the temperature at a comfortable temperature where they believe that workers will attempt to fall asleep, or they'll be just simply too comfortable. So I don't think it's particularly cruel. I think it's just status quo cruel. I think that is just the type of logic that you can expect from anybody who's constructing these types of environments that just naturally pan out to be hellish. I think that they're designed to be as such. I've had managers complain to me that I am too relaxed, that I am not stressed enough, that I'm not worried enough on the job. So I do believe that they are deliberately designing these environments to be uncomfortable. In fact, I think that's part of the dress code. I think it's inbuilt into the dress code. It's something that I've reported on previously. They oftentimes some of the dress codes that they have are just specifically designed to be uncomfortable, and they really don't want workers to feel truly comfortable as they are doing their jobs. One thing that I guess I wanted to add to this discussion, two concepts. I think they're legal concepts as they relate to workplace racism, and I think these concepts are called retaliation and constructive termination. So when it comes to the concept that they call, it's a legal concept called constructive termination. And the idea behind what is called constructive termination is that an employer will make a workplace so intolerable for a particular worker that they opt to terminate themselves, that that would be the only logical conclusion that any reasonable person in that position would come to with regard to their employment. So this is for at-will employment situations. Your employer is doing things to deliberately make you want to leave. Now that this doesn't include extra scrutiny or extra checking of your work, it has to be something that they can demonstrate as particularly unprofessional. This is behavior that does not belong in the workplace. This can be in the form of yelling, profane language, physical threats, anything basically that is behavior that you would deem inappropriate, you would find to be offensive, that isn't in the realm of, hey, we're, you know, checking your work, or, hey, we, you know, want you to do extra work. These aren't grounds for constructive termination. It's just that they are truly working to make your workplace intolerable to what they call a reasonable person. Now, again, this is all up to the discretion of the person that's being affected by this behavior, and it's, and any officiating bodies that are determining that this was the cause for termination, but this is counted under the grounds of wrongful termination. And now retaliation. Now retaliation is, I don't have the specific definition here, but the basic concept behind retaliation, the basic spirit of the concept is that if you are making complaints to your employer about conduct that is taking place on the job or about anything really, if you make, you know, any sort of inquiries to HR and they turn around and terminate you, that can be grounds for a wrongful termination suit under the grounds of retaliation. Now, one thing about retaliation that's important to note is that there is what they call temporal stipulations associated with wrongful termination, retaliation. You can't say, for instance, you know, I reported this incident XYZ is going on, and then 6 months later, they terminate you. You can't say, see, this was termination or this was retaliation. There's just simply too much time. In fact, most jurisdictions, I've been informed, place a restriction of, I believe it's 30 days. Before they can go ahead and say this is retaliation. And then 90 days is the longest that they're going to look at it as some sort of link. So if you are in a situation where you are reporting your employer for any sort of incorrect conduct and they terminate you, that is grounds for a wrongful termination suit call under the concept of retaliation. They are not allowed to fire you simply because you're making complaints or asking questions on the job. Thank you.
Appreciate that, Mr. Steele. Definitely, there's lots of information about that because that, at least the retaliation portion, that's something that you'll see white people speak about on a regular basis, and making sure that you're informed about that. I think one of the clips that I played a few weeks back where it was white women, but they were talking about the same thing in terms of just being very informed locally, looking at the laws and what have you about your rights as a worker in terms of retaliation. If you report, and it doesn't even have to be about racism, you can just make a report of wrongdoing. I think we had some listeners before who reported just they were violating their own policy. with things that they were doing on the job, and they spoke up and said something about it, and they were fearful that whites were going to retaliate. I think we even had some listeners where that did happen, where they retaliated against them again. It wasn't because they said something about racism. It was just because they said, hey, you know, this is the policy as it's stated, and we're not doing that. You know, we should try and follow our own rules. So, I would encourage folks to be very informed about that. And even still within the system of racism, white supremacy, expect any level of tackiness and incorrect behavior from white folks. Other folks that we've not heard from, if you have commentary on the scenarios that have been presented thus far, or if you have your own situation, feel free.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir. Retired firefighter in Florida. Good to hear from you.
Greetings, everyone. Emphatically, yes. When it comes to white people turning down the temperature in your workplace, fire department, you're there for 24 hours. It's even a sleeping quarters, and especially in that particular environment. Granted, that depends on what station you're at, and also on what type of day you're having, or whether or not you're going to be able to sleep anyway. But nevertheless, there is a lot of places that I've been to over the 20 some odd years that I was on where the sleeping quarters is like a meat locker. You could hang meat in a doggone place. It's so cold. Even during the winter, and it's deliberate. And white people, due to, in my opinion, their nature, you know, they are, you know, their history being, you know, in cave dwellers and whatnot. And I think genetically, I could be wrong, but I think genetically they're more conducive to colder temperatures anyway. They'll be laying up there in the bed with nothing but their underwear on, with no sheet over them at all. There is a remedy to that problem that you would just have to be prepared by having heavy blankets, you know, that sort of thing to protect you from that very, very cold atmosphere. And it's done deliberate. It's done deliberate. They actually laugh about it. They actually laugh about it as far as what I've witnessed out of white people primarily. And the constructive name calling that white people do, as far as deliberately, it is deliberate of them shortening your name or saying something. You have to be, and I was listening to the earlier readings, and I think the writer was correct if he went right away and basically corrected the person and basically, you know, keep informing them about the only name that you would like to be called, be addressed as, that sort of thing. And you know, be courteous, but at the same time, you could be courteous and have a aura of firmness also at the same time. Because they're always, like I think I heard you say, because they're always watching you. Non-white people, especially non-white black people, take that for granted. But white people are very much paying attention to you when you're not really aware of it. So, that's always essential to get those type of things squared away. And that's all I have for right now. I'll just listen, and wherever I can chime in, I will. Thank you.
Indeed, indeed. A meat locker, he said, at the fire department. Wow. I think that is wacky. Other folks that are on the line have suggestions, commentary, or if you just want to share your own situation, feel free. Line should be open if you have a hand up.
Can I be heard?
You're a little low, sir. If you could speak up, that would be grand.
How about now?
Give us another sentence. Let's see.
Okay. Let's try that again. Is that better?
Sounding good.
All right. Good deal. All right. So it's Mark in North Carolina. I just noticed, I had an observation from team meetings that we have at my current workplace. And the dynamic that I notice is that usually the room is kind of divided. So you have the white people on one side, and then you have non-white people on the other side of the room. I don't know how that takes form. It just kind of happens. But what I noticed is that in the conversations for any issue that we're bringing up or what have you, it seems as if the white people automatically assume the position of being the expert. And that's regardless of how knowledgeable they are or how effective they are in terms of their performance. Initially, when I was a little bit more confused about the system, racism, white supremacy, I would make an effort to try and kind of show how much I knew about whatever the subject matter was they were talking about, because I didn't want to accept the ignorant black person concept. So I noticed that typically that would lead to a lot of wasted time and energy and even frustration. And that's whether I was, you know, knowledgeable about the concept or if I had to just kind of default and admit that I didn't know as much as I thought I did. So what I did going forward was I made efforts to exercise silence. So I just kind of let the meeting go. And if I have something to interject, I'll put it in question form and avoid making statements. Another thing that I noticed is that in making statements, I see like a lot of the non-white people, they may make a statement and it could be perceived as a complaint or a grievance. And when they do that, the white people may have been thinking this the whole time, but they would just kind of use terms like, you know, just to piggyback off of what so-and-so said, you know, and it would still kind of be that the non-white person who made the statement would be the focal point still. The other thing that I wanted to mention is that I noticed how the white people who are in, I guess, senior roles, quote unquote, or leadership roles, they would talk to the non-white people in a using a doubtful tone of speech, if that makes sense. It could be just in the intonation. They come across as if they're not confident to the person about the person. And I think that if a non-white person internalizes that, then they could kind of be doubtful of themselves. And I think that that's a standard operating procedure for white people that I've seen in the workplace. Thank you for letting me share.
I would agree. I would agree in terms of the tone, the way that white people, in general, I think, even extends beyond the workplace. But certainly in the workplace, I've seen and heard that same sort of tone that you're talking about, sir. Other people who dialed in, if you have a hand up, if you have commentary that you would like to share, people that we have not heard from, if you dialed in, if you have a hand up, if you either have suggestions, comments on what you've heard from folks thus far, if you have your own situation that you want to address, feel free.
Hello? Can I be heard?
I heard both of you. We'll nab our female caller first.
Okay, hi. It's Rochelle from Florida. Just in terms of always being watched, I wanted to just comment on anyone who works primarily with, like, technology. If you work any job where you're always on a laptop or anything like that, people may already be aware, but tech people are administrators with, you know, access to tech. People can remote in. So just, you know, always treating it like a tool of the workplace and not ever personalizing it. If you're allowed to take your devices home, whether it be laptops or mobile devices, not ever getting so comfortable where you have it on your own Wi-Fi or you're going on your own personal email, personal sites, because people can remote in, meaning they can access what you're accessing. They can look at what you're seeing remotely, whether they're near you or far away or whatever the case may be. So just keeping that in mind, and also with all of the devices having camera capabilities, just being aware that people can utilize those parts of the equipment to view and listen in, and even some of the smart televisions. There was recently something about, I believe, specifically Samsung smart televisions where, you know, it was brought to the fore that those televisions in particular have had access or rather have been utilized where the audio and other things could be seen on the other end. So just being aware always when you're working with devices as well, that those are tools that can be utilized to intrude, and they can be used, you know, against you if you're not very careful. And that was it at this time.
Amen. Say it. I almost want to say it 3-4-20 times. That cannot be overemphasized with all the new technology and stuff and a lot of jobs that they give you. They might give you, you know, a phone or a tablet or a computer or all of the above. Though the same thing I said before with those possessive adjectives, this is not my desk. This is not my office. This is not my job. This is not my mobile device, computer, whatever it is. Absolutely. If you think white people are under surveillance just watching you, buddy, wait till the IT racists get involved and start going through your browser history and everything. Man, all of that stuff. Just you should be thinking, if this is their computer, their device or what have you, I'm going to treat it as such and not access any of my personal, you know, whatever it is. I think that's a great advice. Not even checking your email or anything, because whites are super, super nosy and the technology is just advancing at a mind-boggling clip. So I think that's excellent, excellent suggestions, ma'am. The male caller that spoke up simultaneously, were you going to comment also, sir?
Yes, sir. First-time caller, my name is Dee, and I'm calling from upstate New York area. I just wanted to chime in on a weather conditions and the office that I work in, it's like kind of extremely cold. I tried to come in with a hat and they forbid me from wearing that right there. I mean, like it's so cold in there that you could basically catch a cold. And I think I have a couple of different occasions. And also with the recording devices, I have one other non-white coworker at my job, and we speak from time to time. I try to stay coded and not speak on racism and white supremacy, but it just comes up from time to time. And the other day he mentioned that we might be recorded. And I kind of noticed that a lot of the white coworkers or whatever, like they look at me kind of differently now. So I don't know if they recorded us or they listened to our conversations or whatnot, but it is what it is. But yeah, I just wanted to chime on that, and probably have a little bit more to add on later. Thank you.
Appreciate that. I'm not surprised if you made that sort of comment that, you know, hey, they could be recording us, and then maybe they were, and white people heard you say it, and now they're looking at it. It wouldn't surprise me. And this is not playing to paranoia. It's just because my experience has been racist when they notice, like, oh, this is one of the niggers who's a little less confused. That sticks out. Like, they will pay attention. Like, you got to watch this one. That boy right there. He even knew that we were spying on him. Got to watch him. Got to be careful around him. So that it could be exactly that. Maybe it's not. Maybe they didn't see anything. Maybe they're just, you know, doing what racists do. The tip, since you all have kept talking about it, that temperature thing. When I lived in California, I worked in the Oakland school system, and they had mostly black children. Now, most of the staff were white. I was one of the few black people there, and particularly black males. They did not have very many at all, even though they had a ton of black male students in the classroom. But they had terrible heating. They didn't have air conditioning in the classroom at all, which is not, you know, totally uncommon for this part of California, because this is not Southern California. But it was just terrible temperature in the building. And so in the wintertime, now this is California, so I mean, it's not Arctic cold, but still, you know, it's cold. Like, it will be in the 50s. And this is Bay Area, California. So there, it might even creep down to the, you know, upper 40s. It would be cold enough that it would be chilly. If you had heat in the room, you would turn it on. Frequently, we weren't able to turn it on. So I remember us being in there shivering. Like, I literally remember taking like my jacket, wearing the children's jacket one day because it was so cold, and they changed the rules. I used to wear my, I had like a winter hat on my head because my ears would get cold. They changed the policy so that you couldn't wear hats in the building. That was part of why I wore a hat, because they had terrible heating. on the building. I don't know if they were doing it deliberate. I was super confused about racism. I don't know if it was a building-wide thing or they were just cheap. I remember at the time just thinking that, you know, it was cheap. They just didn't have great budget or whatever the case is. But maybe it was being done deliberately to keep the children and, you know, staff cold. But I do remember that now that you all have brought it up. Do we have other folks who chimed in who had commentary, questions, incidents they wanted to share?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes, thank you very much, sir. Greetings to Gus, the host, the listeners and callers. One thing I wanted to start out with was, like, I think you had mentioned this maybe a couple years back or a little while back about how white people will talk about different types of subjects or show that they have extensive knowledge about numerous topics, maybe car mechanics or raises or finances. But when it comes to racism, they'll pretend like they don't know anything, or they'll say, oh, wow, I didn't really know that that was happening, and try and flip it back on you, like, well, can I get your view? I start out with that to say that I know that in the news there's been a lot of discussion about all of the Confederate monuments down here in the South or whatever, and I think there's still maybe 3 or 4 throughout Florida, but downtown they have been pretty much still arguing about where to relocate the statue. And I think it was maybe Wednesday. Yeah, yesterday they had this protest and a counter protest with law enforcement present. And like, it was just somewhat overwhelming because a part of me knew that it would come about again, but it seemed like it was a high presence of confusion because when I drove by there after work, there were a bunch of different flags. A couple of them I had never even seen before. And then there was, like, I seen the rainbow flags over there. And there were people who, I guess, were in support of the Confederate monument, about 6 white men. They were standing there, and, you know, it was calling each other names, a bunch of tackiness, so a bunch of high energetic emotion. And one lady had a sign that says, "End white supremacy." And but it's interesting because I didn't really see too many non-white people. I seen some of them, but the reporter for our local news station, she was going up talking to the people, and the guy says, "Oh, well, you know, we're here because this is a U.S. veteran or something like that." That's the term he used. He didn't say the Confederacy. So I think he was using some codification. But, you know, they was courteous to the non-white reporter. But, yeah, they were pretty much calling each other names and stuff. So that was a protest about the Confederate statue in front of my workplace. The next incident was there's a black female who has been undergoing a lot of relocating as far as the workstations. And it's not just her this time. It was whole departments being switched around, going to different areas. So she mentioned that she didn't want to sit in a desk where she would have her back turned. You know, that's the term she used from what she was telling me. So she got moved to another area. She went and told requested to a powerful white person that she would like to sit in another area. And that was an area where another black female was being moved. And so the reason I bring this up was she was saying that how she she told me that I'm not sure if she called both of these people racist. It's too white people, I would say powerful white people. And she said their responses were, she said their responses were like they agreed with her. But see, I didn't get everything verbatim what they said in her response. But she mentioned to me that she either accused them or she called them racist, both of them. So, and these are younger, you know, newer white people at the office. So, I found that to be very interesting, you know. So she didn't necessarily say what their responses were. So they've been very quiet when she's been bringing up the race issue. So she's been very bold, to say the least. And that's all I have to say right now. Thanks.
Wow. Not the young white people at the office being accused of being racist. Wow. Who could even imagine such a thing? That is that moving. That maybe it would have been good to get her code on exactly what she said to get her seat moved. I think that came up last. I know it's come up more than that on the program, but I think someone last week was just talking about that, being able to get moved either to a different location in the building or whatever it is, and what the code is, so that you can, you know, get that process moved along. Those Confederate things, I just heard somebody saying that today, suggesting that white people are ignorant. I don't know if that pops up in the work context or if that is a discussion. I know there has been so much about the monuments coming down in Florida and different places. I don't know if that is something that's coming up at work. I know in Virginia they had whites carrying torches at night to protest the removal of the monument. So I don't know if that's a dialogue that's coming up at work. I'd say the same thing that I say for, you know, everything else. I would not share an opinion on it. I would just, you know, if whites want to volunteer their frustrations or thoughts on the matter, great. Let's hear what you have to say. But I would not share a thought, what have you. It would just be something interesting that I observed if that did come up while I was at work with whites or even non-white people. Did other folks who dialed in have commentary they wanted to share, either about what you've heard thus far or if you have your own situation that you want to address? If you have a hand up, line should be open.
May I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Hello, this is Red from Ohio. I only have a few observations this week, and I did want to say hello to everyone. First, I did want to say I have used some of the advice from, I think, either last week or the week before, as far as if whites are calling you by a different name, not to just respond at, you know, every single time, because I'm kind of dealing with that now. It's kind of like a term of endearment that I'm being called, and I don't like it, but I feel like I'm trying to figure out the best time and the best method to kind of get that to stop. It's not something that's necessarily derogatory, but I feel like since white art can be deceptive, who knows why I'm being called this. A few observations. We recently had a meeting at my job, and one of the superiors, white person, a white man, he, in the meeting, he used the term white space, which I've never heard of, and he actually defined it, because in the meeting it was, I would say, about 50 to 60% non-white, and then the rest would be white. But it was, he was referring to it as basically a pool of potential clientele, and in the positive light, because I couldn't understand, like, why you would use, how this term even came to be. So basically, if they wanted to get different types of clients or different clients, period, these are the good clients that we would try to pull from. That's how I took it, and he did kind of use words like that to describe that term. There was also a video shown, and just to show how different technologies, like, are enhancing the industry, I guess. And there was this video where this black man was using, like, Siri, and he was using it to pay a bill. And the bill, he was highly melanated. And the bill was, they gave him the balance, because he asked for the balance, and then they said, do you want to make a minimum payment or the full balance? And he went ahead and made the minimum payment, which I thought was kind of, I feel like it could have been subliminal, as if, you know, just a way to kind of strike at blacks. Like, you know, they're always barely scraping by, or they're always only paying the minimum. The last thing was that the manager, the leader of the meeting, this white man, he had referred to this black male that was in this little video as, you know, he was really smooth when he was talking to Siri, and he's like the Luther Vandross of, I don't know, just communicating with this machine. It's kind of making me think about a Black Mirror now that I come to think about it. But I guess that's all I had. Thank you for letting me share.
How tacky. Always got to slip the tackiness in the late Luther Vandross. With the name thing, that was where you started. I think just saying it, like if you said it, they weren't calling you something that was necessarily derogatory, but it was a name that you didn't want to be called. It's not what's on your driver's license, not what you want to be called. Like I think we talked about that before. I'm just a big advocate. You can be courteous. It doesn't have to be a big stand or anything, but just, you know, I'd appreciate it if you all could just call me, you know, my name. I'm just not a fan of nicknames. People always give them to me. No offense, just I'd appreciate it if you call me by my name. I think, and every time, that's the thing. I think if you're just consistent about it, where they do it every time and you don't give them a pass, you can do it with a smile or whatever your personality is, but every time, and if you're consistent with it, generally it's been my experience, they will go ahead and comply. If they see you're serious with it and I just want to be called by my name, folks will generally comply in a work setting. Yeah, and with the rest of it, yeah, that's just white's being tacky all the way. The situation, the black person paying the minimum and all, Luther Vandross, that's just to be expected racist behavior. Did other folks, did anyone have suggestions for any of the callers that we've heard from, different situations that they're dealing with? If you have your own situation. In fact, I forgot that I had people who wrote in. Let me make sure I'm knocking these down as we go as well. This black female wrote in. She said, I've been listening to the archives of the Cows broadcast for a few months. My attempted spouse has been a faithful listener of your programs, as well as Mr. Fuller's compensatory concept for years. I've been learning several new and constructive concepts that have been beneficial in helping me to better recognize, understand, and combat racism, white supremacy. Currently, I work in a long-term rehabilitation and nursing facility. Racism is very much alive and thriving in my workplace. Just yesterday, I heard a conversation between a coworker of mine and a non-white patient that resides in the facility. The coworker is a 27-year-old white female who holds a doctorate in physical therapy. The coworker asked the non-white patient what was the first thing she was going to do when she got home. The patient replied, "I'm going to cook for my husband." The racist white coworker then proceeded to ask, "What are you going to cook? Chitlins?" Pig intestines, for people who don't know, this is slave victuals, the way some folks refer to them. I found that very tacky and trashy, but not surprising coming from an individual that practices racism professionally on the job. A couple of weeks prior, I was walking down one of the corridors in the facility. An elderly white woman called out to me as I was passing by. "Hello, weasel." I turned around and I politely told her I was not a weasel. Then I asked her if she was the mother of weasels. She looked at me for a couple of seconds, then burst out laughing and replied, "That was a good one." I kept it moving, feeling justified in my moment of black self-respect. There we go. And the naming of black people coming up again and again, why just suggest every time exactly what she stated there, black self-respect. Every time, I would appreciate it if you would call me by my name, whatever that is. Just call me by my name. Thank you kindly. Not any, you know, little nicknames, weasel, all of that. And it's always something tacky. That's always where we're going. I'm not a weasel, I'm not a rodent, some non-human entity. It's always headed in that direction. That even reminds me in the South during the so-called civil rights movement, they had a one of the whites in Alabama. He was talking about the NAACP. He said it's niggers, apes, alligators, coons, and possums. It's always something like that headed in that direction in terms of how they think about, talk about black people. And the chitlins as well. Remember that when Mr. Steele, he's with us today, when the food thing, I said that racists, they can find a way, even when it gets to food, to come back and be racist on the job. It's going to be lurking in any conversation. Now, for the folks who dialed in, if you have commentary, any of the folks that we have not heard from, if you have commentary, question, suggestion, line should be open. Feel free.
Can I be heard? Oh. Young lady can go ahead,
Scott. Right on.
All right, thank you. I'll make it quick. What you were talking about earlier about, like, white people sneaking up on black people, this is white girl at my job, the one I was telling you guys about, how she just always wants to hug me and stuff like that. Well, you know, she, like, lately she's been, like, sneaking up on me in the store and, like, pretending, quote-unquote, to, like, punch me in the throat or kick me in the leg. And she goes, hiya, hiya, ha, 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 it's so funny, I'm a ninja. And I just kind of look at her and walk away. But lately, well, not lately, it was 2-3 days ago, her her fiance, which is another white woman, came to bring her something to eat. And she asked if she could go eat with her. And I was like, okay, whatever, I don't care. And her fiance, she says, yo, what's up, man? How you doing? Yo, yo. And I looked at her in her face and I said, I do speak English. And she just got red in the face and she walked away from me. And that's it. That's all I wanted to share.
The patterns, we talked about that last week. And I bring that up. I say again, I point that out just to say, this to me evidences that whites, they're not ignorant about racism, white supremacy, and further, it just shows they do a lot of the same things. We just talked about that last week. In fact, that was the opening intro for the workplace racism program last week, was how whites, they will wait until the black employee, one or two that they've allowed to work there, come in, and now it's, oh, what's up, my dog, you chilling? Like, we just talked about that last week, consistently, where they will engage in all of these tacky racist behaviors. That's why I hope a big part of this is not being surprised. We can help us kind of watch our blood pressure so that we're not getting stressed out. We're not getting upset. We're not caught off guard. This is, oh yeah, this is what I say last week. Dogs bark, birds chirp. White people practice racism and do it tacky all the way. So just, I think that can go a long way to helping us in how we respond and to help kind of safeguard our black mental health, in my opinion, as we deal with these insults and racist behavior on a regular basis, and recognizing it as racist behavior. I hope that helps as well, accurately recognizing what you're looking at and what's happening to us. The male caller who spoke up simultaneously, were you going to comment as well?
Yep. Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Oh, cool. Good evening. 2812 from BA. I'm on the road, so if you can't hear me, I'll speak up. Mortgage banker, I taught a credit class today. Three non-white people were there. Went really well. Connected with a non-white female, black female, that was actually from New York. Had a good conversation. Talked a little bit about real estate development and different things. So it was a really good, constructive conversation. She seemed like she was a lot less confused. She even introduced me to a local black real estate organization that I had no idea existed in the area that we are in, which was very surprising because she didn't know about it either. But I was glad that we actually connected. Last thing is I'll share is that this week I had maybe like 8 or 9 clients that all had major credit issues. And for anybody, just to give them a little background, you know, I do loans. I do mortgages for people. I do credit repair and I help. But that's, you know, I do it on the side. We don't charge anybody, but you give out advice. And it's just been victim after victim after victim having major credit issues and things of that nature. And I'm just going to reveal a little bit of honesty. I'd say maybe after the sixth person called me and they had unfortunate credit circumstances, some anti-blackness did kick in. And I said, man, if I don't, what is going on? And then I stopped. Because I said, the only reason why these victims are in this situation is because racist man, racist woman have created these circumstances to where we try to keep up with them. We're in bad neighborhoods. We don't have the same access. We have to borrow money. And so it's just always good to be honest with yourself. And I did have a moment of anti-blackness. It went away. I was able to help the victims and continue to move forward. And I just wanted to share that because sometimes I do realize, specifically when I was listening to Pam last night, that when you are dealing with a lot of victims and a lot of dysfunction, and specifically if sometimes your job is predicated on helping victims, sometimes it can get frustrated. But, you know, as Mr. Fuller says, you know, justice is, you know, the people who need the most help get the most help. And, you know, unfortunately because of racism, black people need the most help. So just do your best to try to help as many victims as possible and put them in better situation. That's all I got. Thanks, guys.
Hey, man. I so appreciate that. I think Pam would appreciate that, too. She was with us yesterday. Shout to Pam. I appreciate that because I think that just being honest, you know, with our situation where we forget how black people ended up in the pitiful condition that we're in. A lot of black people do have bad credit, but white people are most to blame for all that. Particularly when you start to get down into the details about how they go hunting for black people for those type of things to ruin us financially with all their different schemes and what have you. Like, oh man, it is amazing. But yeah, that is so important. And I think whites, they get away with that. Us getting frustrated with other black people and not being patient with other black people and, you know, kind of everything about this environment is engineered for us to have that sort of response. So definitely if you work in some sort of field where you're going to be working with black customers, black patrons and what have you, that is definitely one thing that you can do. And I think we've had people who've commented on this before where they say, hey, I try as best I can from the weak position that I'm in as a victim of racism to make sure that, you know, in the capacity that I can, I help black people out as much as I can. I'm as courteous with them as I can possibly be in the work environment and just make sure that I'm monitoring my anti-blackness in that environment. I think that's super important. And all of us just recognizing that because we've all been contaminated. Other folks who dialed in who have a hand up, if we have not heard from you and you have a commentary you want to share, line should be open. Feel free.
Hello?
Yes, sir.
Hey, how are you? This is, my name is Keith. I'm in New York. This week, I chose to focus on non-white people when looking at racism. I think generally I keep hearing most people focus on white people, but I heard, brother, he's been on your show before, Mwalimu Baruti, I think his name is. I think that's how you pronounce it, if I'm not mistaken. And he was talking about something called the zero-sum game. And basically, he just said that, you know, white people, being that they're from a cold environment, they're used to war, and they can function in a warlike state. And I noticed that they always have the non-white people on edge, and like with the jitters. And it's like they come through with this, like with their energy. And then by the time they leave, everybody is stressed out. So I decided to focus on the non-white people and see how they were reacting. And I just noticed that most of the non-white people being real silly, always laughing a lot, always joking and playing, never talking about anything serious, and eavesdropping on white people's conversations, and white people always being serious. I mean, they were talking about how the boss is going to change our lunch break and different things, and I was wondering, you know, they didn't send out a memo about it, so I'm like, how does this white guy know that the owner of the company is planning on making some changes? And I would think, man, white people have a network, and it goes straight from the top to the lowest white person in the company. And, you know, focusing on the non-white people and noticing how silly they are, it just helped me to try to be as serious as possible. My day-to-day has been pretty easy recently, because I'm working with the non-white male who's he's Puerto Rican, but I don't know if I would technically consider him black, even though he is dark skinned. I would say he's a black Puerto Rican, but I don't know if that's how he considers himself. He is less codified. And but I work with him, and then our foreman is black, and then there's another non-white male, and then there's the two white foremen on the job site. So, I mean, they're at the top because, you know, white supremacy, but it just makes it easy, and I always try to go out of my way to make sure that I'm doing the correct things so that the black foreman, I always tell him, like, if you need anything, let me know. Anything you need, let me know. So he's always like, he seems to be under less stress being that we're completing our task, and he's able to take a step back and relax a little bit. But, I mean, they stressed him out. He already quit twice, and when he quit, they told him he was sensitive. Instead of helping him out, they told him that, oh, the guys don't respect you. You're being sensitive. So I just knew. I was like, you know what? They intend to put you in a stressful environment, so you want to quit. You know, but I've taken the position. I don't care. If they want to fire me, go ahead. I'll just go to another company. And, you know, I'm in a union. They got, like, 70 companies. If I could make one company a year for the next 20 years, I think that I'll maintain, you know, I think I'd be all right. So, and then plus side work. So, you know, I'm not really looking at dedicating myself to one company in particular, but I mean, you know, that's my position on it at this particular, on this particular day. That's it for now.
Context of white supremacy. Fascinating. Sensitive. That is a common one where black people, we're just sensitive. If racism, white supremacy is an issue, we're being terrorized and, you know, we make a report. Hey, I'm being abused here. You're so sensitive. That's why I encourage people to not say black people cried racism, because it's in the same vein. They're just treating you like you're some little child, and, you know, your feelings just get hurt if we, you know, should tell a nigger joke or anything like that. And you're just so sensitive. You're just like a little child. It's the same mentality, same racist thought process. But yeah, I'm not surprised about that at all. Yeah, in terms of what we deal with in the work environment. Did other folks, I guess, either have suggestions, comments on what we've heard thus far? We did have some people who asked for suggestions on how to deal with some of the different scenarios that we're going through, and we had people who wrote in as well. Anybody that we missed, anybody who has a hand up that we've not heard from at all?
Can I be heard?
I think we have Emmy. Yes, ma'am.
Greetings. I have two sort of vignettes or stories that I want to share. The first is I work as a concierge in a residential property in the DMV area, the Sedity part of the DMV area. I do the overnight. And there's a particular racist who works there, or he doesn't work there, he lives there. And he and I have had a couple of interactions. And I think we established that I'm not the one. Now, it's a 24-hour position, so I'm not the only one that works there. So there's other non-white, specifically black females, who work other shifts. And so when I relieve one, they'll tell me a story about this guy. And then when the other one relieves me, they'll tell me a whole nother story. And so I try to tell these women to, you know, I try to give them some of the things that we talk about here on the COWS, or some strategies that I have employed with this particular racist that have worked for me. And that's pretty much being extremely, because he's so aggressive. He is not a, like, so-called friendly white person whatsoever. I took the stance that he's not to be played with. He's extremely volatile, and I think he's just extremely reactive. And given that I work there in the overnights on the weekends, it's not like I have the property management office open to be of any assistance. Hours go by before anyone's actually walking through the lobby. So that leaves a lot of time where I'm by myself, and I don't really have any backup, so to speak. So Last weekend, one of the ladies told me that he threatened to kill one of these so-called, he called them like dirtbags or Mexican scumbags or something like that, that work in the restaurant next door. And he was like, you can quote me. So that's like in our official logs. And then he threatened to kill a female in the parking garage who was walking with her older father. Like, you know, parking garages, they have those really tight turns. So, you know, you can't always see somebody, but he was speeding. So he got upset and said that. So that's like in a log. And all property management said is like, next time it happens, call the police. Well, I've already resigned in myself. I'm also the one that had to deal with when I worked during the day at a commercial property as a corporate concierge or whatever, with the touching. So I feel like I have had it, I've had enough trauma at this point. I've experienced enough at this point that I'm able to see a little bit further ahead, and I'm prepared to take certain measures or actions. And I've already kind of thought it through by chess. So my new way of being with him, he only has one time to approach me in any kind of threatening way, or I'm just going to mace him. Like, that's it. If he comes, I mean, at any point, like, he can ask me questions, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to be trigger happy on my mace or anything. Like, he can't ask me to let him into his apartment or ask me to give him his packages or whatever. But should he say anything about killing or like slam his hand on the desk or make me feel any way threatened, I'm going to just mace him. I'm going to make the log. I'm going to be recording. I don't have the fancy recorder that I can like clip on me or anything, but I do have one of those note recorders, like a standard lecture note recorders, brand new batteries in it. Memory is clear. I'm just going to start recording from the minute I get in, just in case I don't have enough time. Like, I'm really quick with my phone. You know, I have the little like scan reader or whatever, and I can boop, hit the voice joint, but I don't really know if I have the time in the future. So I'm just going to start recording the whole thing. If nothing happens, I'll just wipe it, get new batteries, like do whatever until I can get one of the fancier pen ones that I can clip on me or something like that. But I'm going to work with what I got. And he has one time. Now, I've already thought it through. So like, if I'm unable to keep my job, so be it. You know what I'm saying? But I've already like, I don't want to continue to feel the way that I'm feeling when he walks past the desk, and I'm not going to allow anybody to make me feel that level of threatened. Like, I don't think that it, and property management has already made it clear that they are not going to be proactive in the situation on my behalf. I don't have enough time to call 911, and I'm not dealing with all that. I'll call 911 once I mace him, and we'll just go ahead and have that thing play out, and it'll just be done. I got two things to mace. Keep them with me. And so that's one, and I've thought about it, and the more I think about it, that's just what it is. I don't think that I should have to, be in an environment where it's acceptable for anybody, to be threatening people's lives. And that's just, and all I'm supposed to do is write notes. Mind you, I'm there from 11 PM to 7 AM, just me. So all I need for him is come in drunk or whatever, try to put hands on me, what I'm supposed to do, fight with him or call the police and be like, oh, this happened, and file a report. I'm not doing all that. I'm not doing like my, I'm trying to go ahead and protect myself as best as possible. So just wanted to let you all know that. I'm also the female who dropped down to this position so she could go to school. So the other workplace environment that I consider is school. And so I'm in summer session now. This is the first week of summer session. And I've also been practicing diligently a couple of things. The first original one was constant eye contact, maintaining very open, like I'm just observant, but intense eye contact and not backing down. So I sit through, if I start shaking or if I feel uncomfortable, like I will sit through that. And over time, I was able to become better at doing. And I, because I believe in the power of nonverbal communication, and I think that that's a little bit, I think I can say more in my nonverbals than I can if I talk a whole lot. So that's just a personal thing that I've done, but it's worked for me. The other thing I've been practicing is, like not smiling. I was raised a completely different way. I kind of like in a perfect world would love to be a very bubbly person and just be like, just a bubbly, happy person. I would. but my experience has shown me that that's not effective. And even though it might get me into some doors later on when I get tired, because when you do that, it will let you in. You know, white people are like, oh, the happy, smiley Negro. But what happens is you get tired after a while, and then you become regular, and then they don't like that. And so the problem is you've already set up this kind of tone where they expect you to be that Negro for them. And when you can't do it anymore, we have an issue. So my thing is to just stop doing it altogether. So I don't smile a whole lot. And I don't, like, you know, even if we make eye contact, I won't smile. If you are non-white, specifically black, I'll smile. But otherwise, I'm not smiling. And I don't talk. I make it a point not to be, like, extra in the communication part about things that are unimportant, especially in school or at my job. So class started, you know, everyone's talking and trying to make friendly. I don't feel like doing it. I just told you all some codes that I've been practicing that have been working for me. So I continue to try to make them more of a habit and to come naturally. And they are coming naturally, so much so that I'm not really paying attention to having to put a lot of effort getting to the point. So I get in a class, sit down, we're doing everything. And then I just start asking questions because we're going over the syllabus. I need to go ahead and understand this, you know, whatever. Of course, it's a white female teacher, and this is for, like, bio. So, from, you know, it's, hey, my name is such and such. This year, this is what I'm doing. All right, cool, and keep it moving. No, like, hey, and that's another thing. I also practice changing the tone of my voice so that I can talk at this register that you all are hopefully hearing, and it's not coming off some other type of way, instead of, hey, like, yeah, like, I'm totally, like, trying to, you know, do this thing, and it's so nice to meet you. I'm like, no, because that creates a whole nother image. So we've gone through, my whole thing is I'm not naturally inclined in math and sciences, so I have to pay a lot of attention, and I put forth that energy. So I ask questions. Because this is an accelerated course, a lot of information is given in a short amount of time. So if you say something and, you know, you got all these terms being thrown at you, I may not know these terms, or it's the first time I'm really hearing them. So I'll ask questions. And this has happened to me in other classes that I've mentioned before, that the fact that I'm asking questions, students who are, this is a primarily white institution, get all shifty in their seat and start huffing and puffing and coughing and whatever, whatnot. I don't care because I pay tuition. This is what it is. I want the information. This particular class is no different. So I don't really, the class is so small, I'm not going to raise my hand, wait for permission and all this other kind of stuff. I'm just going to ask the question before you move too far ahead. Could you repeat that? I'm not understanding. So anyway, the professor today asked the question. Women will probably know about this a little bit more. Men will probably too, but maybe the women will get it a little bit more. She slow blinked me, y'all. She literally, like, I sit in the front of the class. She slow blinked me twice. And I was like, okay. We're going to get to, you know, we're not going to get to know each other, but that's not, like, going to affect me. So my counter-racial strategy for that, so I'm going to ask even more questions, because I don't care if you're annoyed with me asking questions or not. I pay you. Like, let's get this whole thing straight. That's what me paying tuition is. You don't pay me. This isn't a job that, like, you hired me to do. And it's like, oh, you need to do this and that. No, I pay you. So you're going to answer all of my questions. I don't care how many times you have to repeat it. And that's just what it's going to be. And I resigned on that today because I'm not, like I said, nonverbal communication is far more important to me than verbal communication. So she looked like she wanted to be annoyed because I was asking her questions. I don't care. That's your job. And so part of it, I think, is so interesting because, you know, this isn't like high school or middle school or whatever. You know, these are people, like, if you're in this level of biology, you're talking about being some type of medical person or researcher or whatever like that. So it's very imperative that you understand these functionings and stuff like that. And it shouldn't be some type of issue with me asking a question. Furthermore, when she asks questions, I'm the only one who answers. And to top it all off, I do well in class. Not to boast, but I do well in class. So what I resign in is because instead of trying to take that nonverbal communication to make it feel like something's wrong with me because I'm asking questions that, oh, I must be dense. I'm not dense, stupid, dumb at all. All I'm doing is asking questions, getting the responses, learning the information. And the great thing about math and science is there's a right answer and there's a wrong answer. If I get the right answer, you give me the grade despite whether or not you like me. Moving on. And this will be the last one. So in that class, I live an hour away from where I go to school. I live an hour in the opposite direction of where I go to work. I work. I try very hard to make sure I'm on time. Sometimes I'm not, whatever. Again, I pay for school. Work pays me, I pay for school. So if I'm a couple minutes late, don't take it personal, but she tried to make it seem like that. And I hate when white people do that. They make it seem like if you're a human and you have, like, human faults or not everything is perfect about you, oh, it's like you're just a bad person. And, you know, this is attributable to all blacks. So I was a little bit late the first day, but we actually have this white guy who I didn't even know, but he missed the entire day of class. So when you miss an entire day of class, you're responsible for getting the notes from somebody. So we went on a break. He was outside smoking a cigarette. I went outside to get on the phone. I was getting on the phone when he asked me, oh, were you here on the first date? And I pointed to the phone because I knew exactly what he was about to try to do since I asked the most questions and answered the most questions. He thought he was going to get my notes. Boo, nipped that in the bud, kept it moving. He never got my notes. Coming today, gets to find out the other black female, the only other black female, he got her notes. Why did you only ask black females for their notes? Why not ask the other, you know, 95% of the students in the class who are white for their notes? So for the simple fact that whites know exactly what they're doing when they're doing it. Whites feel very comfortable to take from blacks, black people, to push their perceived power upon non-white, specifically black people, to get whatever it is that they want. At the same time that they demean and act like you're stupid for the very thing that they want from you. And so I just observed all that, and I wish he would. If I miss a day of class, screw it. I'll get the information on my own. Ain't asking none of these people. I asked another non-white person, but I thought that was so interesting. He didn't ask me my name. He didn't say hello. He didn't even introduce himself to me. He just thought he was going to get my notes. But he's white, and he's probably so used to doing that, walking up on black people, asking or doing whatever, and black people always opening the door, giving this and doing that. So, no, that's not going to happen. And one, okay, really quick, I'm so sorry. So in the class today, we had a break. I was eating watermelon. That's another thing I decided I'm not going to feel funny about. I love watermelon. It's watermelon season. So I put watermelon in my bag. I'm sitting outside eating it before lab. So this white guy, I feel somebody looking up at me. I look at him. He looks at me. I, like I said, maintain eye contact. Don't smile. He looked away. I was like, excuse my language, but damn, Skippy, and kept eating my watermelon, went in the class. I'm not going to break eye contact. Even if I start shaking, I think it's better for me. And we're just going to duke it out with the eyes. That's how it's going to be. We get into lab class. Now, the lab professor allows people to play music on Pandora while we're doing lab, which I think is so tacky. Guess what this white racist says he wants the Pandora station to be? 90s rap. So throughout the entire 2.5 hours of lab, I'm hearing Tupac, Biggie. They play Genuine, even though it's not rap. But anyway, nigga this, nigga that, nigga this, nigga that. And it's only 3 black people in the lab. Everybody else is white. The white guy is the one said that he wanted that. That's what played. And I'm not saying anything because I'm just going to observe like a scientist. I'm not, you know, whatever. I like rap, whatever it is, what it is. But I thought that that was very interesting. So I guess, if anyone wants to comment, that's cool. But those are just some of the things that I'm practicing and some of the things that have worked for me. So thank you all for listening.
Wowee, that was a mouthful. We got the classroom incident, and she's about to bear mace this white dude at the concierge desk. Wowee. I guess I would say, number one, I think with the workplace or the concierge situation with this race soldier, kudos, high commendation. I think that should be taken seriously. I think a lot of times, which you mentioned in that scenario where this white guy gets to come in and talk about killing people. I mean, just think of in this climate, they just had that terrorist attack that they've been talking about all week long and everything else that's been going on. And he saw, oh, yeah, you quote me on that. You put my name by that. Oh, yeah. It's May 23rd, 2017. I'm going to kill these Mexicans if they do such and such. And imagine that. A black person coming in and saying that they're going to kill some white people because they don't like what they're doing or they don't like having the access and being able to behave in that sort of belligerent, threatening way on a regular basis and to have that be tolerated. They don't get formal about this. Like, you know, you could be evicted or, you know, we could call the enforcement officials or all of the above and have that not happen. That right there is white power, but I think that's a phenomenal code to take it seriously. The first time that you feel intimidated, threatened, whatever it is, this has been logged. He's been making violent threats, and I'm not going to tolerate it at all. I'm a female. I'm in a vulnerable position. My mace will be at the ready. Act a fool if you want. That is outstanding, outstanding counter-racist code. For the classroom situation, I feel like we've heard this before. We have people who are students and what have you, where whites, they want to come and steal your notes for the class and what have you. And in fact, you said, I thought that was great when you noted that he was only asking black females to steal their notes since he didn't show up for class. It's been my experience that sometimes whites are so competitive, especially for things like med school and law school, these things where it's real hard to get into the schools in the first place and what have you. White people won't share with other white people. Students I'm talking about, they will not share their notes. I've even heard at some of, you know, if it gets real competitive, some of the whites, they will have fake notes so that they share the fake notes, not the real notes, with someone, right? So you'll have all incorrect information and what have you to prepare for your test. So that doesn't surprise me at all. If this person was looking to cannibalize black scholars in the class, and that's just a great reminder for folks, no helping white people. No, I don't have any notes at all. You can have fake notes too to share. But at any rate, I thought that was great, great observation. Definitely encourage, keep asking questions. I think that's one of the ways that white supremacy works, where black people get intimidated to not ask questions. They'll either try and do it where we're, oh, you're such a, you know, dumb, like she was doing when she said she slow blinked you, where it's you're ignorant, you're stupid, I can't believe you don't know. Okay, I'm a victim of white supremacy, and you all did close schools in Virginia for 5 years. So there have been a lot of devastating ramifications for that. We'll try and correct it as best we can. One of the ways, asking questions. Now, my next question, we figure, keep asking questions. That's exactly what needs to be done. And with, I guess, the other situation with the music, great observation. That might be one, because we've talked about that in the workplace context as well, where whites will request, you know, yeah, let's hear some of the nigger music, where there's nigger this, nigger that, bitch this, nigger, and just black people saying all that filth. Where they will want that in the work environment. And I've even told some black people, yeah, I don't think this is appropriate for the work environment. I would do that also. I might encourage that for folks if you're in a classroom setting as well. And I agree, that's totally tacky. If they're allowing that in a class, I don't feel that this is appropriate for a classroom setting. I'm having a difficult time concentrating. Just getting moved. I think it's great as well if you want to just observe and see why they would enjoy something like that. I know Dr. Welsing has talked about that also, but that's just a tip for anyone. If you want to deprive racists of a little of their racist chicanery, yeah, I don't feel, I'm having a difficult time concentrating. Can we get something else or no music at all? Thank you kindly. Just put it that way. Did anyone have comments or suggestions for Emmy? I feel like she had a lot of different vignettes that were happening. Any comments or suggestions?
I have a comment.
Yes, ma'am.
It's about the music. I just have a comment about the music part. I've actually noticed where it seems like white men, it seems like they're doing that all the time. And my, I don't know, my thinking or hypothesis, or I'm not quite sure, but I kind of feel like they do those things to see how we respond, if we are going to maybe even entertain, especially if that white man had selected that particular station and there's only a couple of blacks. I feel like it's always, I feel like it's kind of like an animal call with them, just to see if we're going to dance, if we're going to sing along. And then if that might give them the leeway, okay, well, since you're saying nigger now, then I'm just going to sing the song and say nigger, because I've had that happen to me, but that was awesome. But that was like in like middle school, you know, high school, stuff like that. That's what my frame of mind is, since I feel like I'm starting to notice it a lot more. They seem like they'll play the loud black music when they're around other blacks, or if they know they're coming into contact with them. That's all I have.
If I'm hearing that correctly, that sounds like that might even, what I'm hearing from you, Red in Ohio, that could be similar to, oh, we got some of the Negroes working with us, let's use some of our slang. Could be kind of the same type thing. Oh, we got one or two Negroes here, let's play some of the good old Negro music and see what happens, see if they get in on it with us, or, you know, if it makes them uncomfortable or what have you. Is that sounding accurate to what you were saying, Red?
Yes, definitely. I'm glad that you said it like that, because that's actually the best way to frame it. Yes.
Interesting.
Can I say something real quick, guys?
Mm-hmm.
I almost forgot to leave out something important for y'all. The lab instructor is a white male who has locks, and I forgot to tell you, but I thought this was very important. My lab partner is the black male. He's the only black male in the class. And we had to look at the microscopes today, look at something in the microscopes. We had 6 samples of things to look at. We were the only, and he would hand them to us.
we weren't allowed to get our own slides out of this box. He was handing them out. The first two or three slides that he handed us didn't actually have anything on it. And I felt like he actually wiped it off because I saw him take his shirt and wipe the slide. And I was like, oh, maybe he's just getting dust or something off of it. So the black guy and I, we spent a very long time because, you know, we're learning to use the microscope and everything, trying to focus and like spent all this time. And every time I turned around because the white guy, the lab instructor is behind me, he's already staring at me. And so I was like, can you come over here and find this? And then he'd be like, oh, there's nothing on the thing. And then I just reached a point where I just started getting up. And then when I finally got an opportunity to look at the samples he was choosing from, there are slides, like the material that the other students are looking at is clearly defined, like it's a color substance on the slide. He was intentionally handing us blank slides and watching us search over and over endlessly trying to focus in on this archaea or this bacterium. And I noted that. So not only is he white with his locks, not only is he sitting here playing his 90s rap music and like whatever, you know what I'm saying? He's like, we're the black people in the class. He's the one handing us and he's not letting us get it ourselves, making it so that we couldn't even look on the slides. But that's okay because I peeped him. I know now.
Wow. That important addition with the lock wearing instructor who is permitting this in the classroom, which I've never heard. That's two. I've never heard from where you can't have a coat in a work environment and then where this in a classroom setting where they're playing music. I mean, well, let me think. I guess I have been not in a collegiate. There we go. I've been in classroom settings like high school and stuff like that, but not in a college classroom setting where there's been like music. Like that is a bit much. But yeah, that's great context that he's deliberately sabotaging you all's effort. And I've seen that sort of thing before. You know, we've talked about it in the context of workplace racism, where some black people, Mr. Fuller included, thought, hey, if we just go to work, go to school, show these white people that we're competent, we're here to work hard, and, you know, we're just as smart as they are and hardworking as they are. That's not what this is about at all. Like, you going there and showing them I want to speak up in class and do well and ask questions. Oh my God, like with that, we're totally opposed to seeing black people become intelligent, competent, capable, universal women and men. We're totally opposed to that. We want niggers. We want you all just being about filth and trash so we can stomp on you forever. So of course, yeah, he's doing everything that he can to sabotage your effort blatantly right in front of the class there. Incredible. Or not incredible. That dogs bark, birds chirp. White people practice white supremacy. Other folks, did any other comments on what Emmy had to share? Or folks have their own commentary they want to get to? I have emails to read as well.
I have a few questions.
Proceed.
I heard somebody else. Are you referring to me, Gus?
Yes, sir.
Oh, okay. Miss Emmy, what is your job's regulations to conceal firearms?
You mean like a gun? Or you mean the mace being a firearm?
I mean a gun.
You're not allowed to have any of that. You're not even allowed to have like a pocket knife.
Okay, I was pretty sure of it. I just wanted to make sure. Then again, you know, it still may be, and you don't have to answer. You don't have to answer this because it's basically your business. And I would always have that concealed on whether or not I have a firearm or not. But it may be a good idea to have a permit, concealed weapons permit, and have it in your vehicle. With the mace situation, there still is some dangers involved with that. I would figure that you would know about it. White people have a tendency when something like that, when counter violence is they're beset with, they have a means to be able to turn that around on the victim itself. So also be prepared for that. It it was something else that I was thinking about. As far as classroom, what your reaction was, I would think if it was correct. But if you, grow tired of that type of shenanigans going on in the classroom, have you thought about recording it and sending it to the chancellor's or administration's office, or take it to a news company in the area? I'm pretty sure the reaction would not necessarily that they are negative against something like that going on, but it would be considered to be embarrassing in a lot of cases in a quote unquote professional classroom environment. I would figure. I've seen it a lot on YouTube, and I've seen it in the newspapers, and it normally doesn't have a favorable action to the perpetrators, whoever they are, when something like that takes place in a classroom. Just some thoughts that I've had, that's all.
Thank you. If it gets out of hand, I always have my recorder handy.
Yes, ma'am. Audio and visual. Audio. I mean, because I would like to see it. You know, something like that on, you know, viral on YouTube or whatnot. That sort of thing. So, you know, and then see on how state you, the people who are in charge, would really appreciate that going on in that class, because they may not even know. They may not even know that's going on in a classroom at the university. They may not even know it.
I like that too. I like that too. That'd be interesting to see the response to that. Just, I guess, for folks who might say, concerns, if you mace this race soldier in the work environment and they try to, switch it around to reprimand you or say that, you know, this is some sort of violation, you assaulted him. You know, they could even say that, you know, that, hey, you, this is assault, you know, you using some sort of chemical, on him, in an unwarranted manner. You're not, you know, an enforcement official just cause you're at the desk here. That doesn't mean that you're an armed officer of the law to go out and, you know, assault people. What if they come at you in that sort of way, if it has to get to the point where you have to mace him?
That's by concern also.
That's why I'll start recording my whole shift. My recorder should last my entire 8-hour shift. And so, you know, I'm not trying to mace him. Like I said, if he comes up and he asks me for a package or he asks me to do something that is like, it's, you know, this is just normal, then that's fine. But any, like, if I feel it, I feel like I'm going to use my discretion. Again, I am in here by myself. It's been logged in emails many times that this individual has been aggressive towards either people that sit at the front desk. I've even logged it when I first started working there, or to other individuals in the building. The fact that it is the overnight, and I didn't shoot him. I maced him. And so what will happen if I have to mace him? It will be at the front desk. I'm not any other place. So he would get maced at the front desk, and I would leave out the front building, which will have me on camera, like, because he can come through different ways, but it'll have me on camera. I'll call the police and wait there until the police arrive, and then I'll deal with it there. If I have to leave the job or the job, you know, whatever, that's fine. But we have documentation, written documentation, of his aggressive, threatening, violent behavior, and there's no way for me, I would be a fool to wait until he actually lay hands on me to then be like, okay, maybe I should mace him or call the police. So it's a risk, but it's, you know, I can't, just thinking about what that would feel like for me is not something I'm prepared to physically deal with or mentally be able to deal with, like being aggressed in that manner, like to make me feel physically threatened, like you're going to hit me or like spit on me or do some kind of thing like that when I'm at my job. I'm not going to do that. So like if he's all the way across the lobby and he's, you know, doing whatever, that's over there. But I'm saying you actually have to come to my desk or the desk that I sit at and engage in something. So I'm pretty sure this is not going to be silent, which is why I'm recording it. So I'll be able to have whatever he's saying to me, his tone, whatever words he's using. If he makes, you know, his dog or whatever, able to paint the picture as best as possible to have enough, something behind me to say this is what made me do it. And the fact that property management hasn't said anything to him, my account manager hasn't done anything, so I am left to my own defenses. And I do, I'm going to defend myself, to put it like that.
May I ask something? Just along those lines, since you said that you do have documentation, I was also thinking about that too. And it seems like a lot of the times when it comes to like employment, the employers, if something does happen, they act like, well, the records are confidential. Is there any way, if you haven't already, like take some type of picture or something of the work document, so it's not just your word against it, even though you have the video, but we all know that video, audio, all that, it doesn't matter. So maybe if you could have that too, to help even back up your story even more. And then also, like we've talked about on other shows, just the words. So if he does do something to you, you're the victim, he's terrorizing you, stuff like that. That's what I wanted to add.
Thank you for that. I actually BCC myself on all of my logs. So I have all of my notes that I've ever written, but you're correct. When I get in, I will forward all of the other notes that mention his behavior to myself. That way I can have those already in my own email so they don't magically disappear. Thank you so much for that. I'm going to do that.
No problem.
Great suggestion. Any other questions, comments for Emmy? Or if folks have other commentary that they would like to add, that's welcome as well.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Yes, to the caller, Emmy. I would just say photograph the individual and consider putting it on social media. I've mentioned something like that before, but social media is worldwide. Tell the black men in your life what's going on. Identify individual and let them see a visual of who that individual is, just in case. And I was going to mention, as the retired firefighter, I believe that was him, mentioned firearm, if you were able to bring one, but since you're not able to bring a gun into work. But get your concealed carry license and be prepared to take life if necessary. It's not something that is very pleasant, but it can be something that is necessary. And then it's been mentioned on this show before, there's other weapons. A gun is not the only weapon. Yeah, you have mace, and that's excellent. You may also have something that's like an extension, since you may not be able to have a projectile. You know, maybe you can have, like it's been mentioned, tactical pins. These are devices that you can actually use to end someone's life, defend yourself. There's tactical flashlights. I think you said you were working the night shift, but I imagine it's probably high visibility in the area you're at. It's probably well lit, but if for any reason you're in a dark area, there's certain lights, flashlights that, you know, they shine real bright to blind your whoever the opponent is. Take martial arts classes. Like even for me, my mother put me and my male siblings into martial arts when we were young, just because she was a single parent. After my parents divorced, she was a single parent, so she wanted us to be able to defend ourselves and defend her. And, you know, so I have a stance. Even when I'm not doing anything, you know, people don't really try to sneak up on me. You know, because they can kind of tell, well, if I see you sneaking up on me, I'll probably harm you. And they can see that they'll be harmed. Also, being observant, you mentioned you were observant. That's excellent. Keep your eyes on what's going on. Don't put it down. That's not where the action's going. All the action's not happening towards your telephone. It's happening if you have your eyes level and looking, scanning around. People usually don't, if they're going to attack, they probably won't attack the person who's scanning the room. Watch videos about guns. like there's individuals who will discuss gun safety and tactics of being a safe gun handler and a proficient tactical shooter and all that sort of thing. But they talk about situational awareness, being observant, making sure your back is against the wall, being strategically positioned in every area that you're going to go into. And then the last comment was about your biology class. Biology is also something that I'm very fond of. We all operate by the laws of biology. In your class, I've noticed they do that a lot. You know, what I was doing in school and college, I know that they do those. You can't really tell what the white people might be doing, but they're doing something against you. And so what I would do is I would be a floater. I would go, you know, you don't know what's on that. Your slide didn't have anything on it, but all the white people had something on their slide. Well, I go to school not just to make grades. I go over there to get the information that otherwise I don't have access to. So if I'm there, I'm going to learn any way that I can. So I would, if I were you, and I do it when I was in school, that's what I was doing. When I was in lab, I would go to the other white people, and I would look at their stuff. I would have them. I would just mess in whatever they're doing. I want to be a part of what y'all are doing, whether you like it or not. And they'll eventually, you know, somebody's going to allow you to look at the information so that you can, or look at the slides, look at whatever it is, so that you can get this information. You have to be just, you know, I would be very proactive in trying to get that information. That's all.
Lots of good suggestions. Lots of good suggestions to keep in mind. I guess I would say too, with this, just something to think about. I'll phrase it that way. With the suggestion, telling the white person if they sneak up on you, you know, you could be harmed. I could see, knowing how manipulative, and even remembering Stacy in the UK, I rung her. She was with us yesterday. She's not with us today, but she was with us yesterday when Pam was on the program. And I think she said it was like 3:45 a.m. In the morning, something today, actually, because it was Thursday for her. But she said that she was falsely accused of being aggressive and threatening a white person. I could see a race soldier taking that sort of thing, and oh my gosh, Tim threatened me, and you know, told me he would, you know, bust my head if, you know, I do a little joke from time to time, and you know, it's all play and games, and he told me he was going to kill me or something. Like I could totally see a racist doing something. Just something to think about. I can still see exactly what you said, where you know they just see that you're being serious and are not going to mess around with your personal safety. I could totally see that, but just I do think that is something that's reasonable to think that that could also happen in the system of white supremacy. Other folks have questions, suggestions, comments that they wanted to share. Anybody have any concerns about Emmy taking the position that, hey, if this race soldier, if he tries me, I'm busting the bear mace out, and he is going to get the whole can full. Anybody have concerns about that? Or folks, everyone think that that is black self-respect, correct thing to do? No thoughts at all?
If this is read again, mm-hmm. I'm kind of torn between if it is black self-respect, but like I said in other shows, I'm real paranoid, so I'm definitely, you know, concerned for Emmy, but I can understand because there's only so much you can take. That's why I was, you know, offering the tips I did, but I do feel like it is black self-respect, but it's just that there's definitely going to be consequences with it, especially if he's someone who lives there.
This is Rochelle from Florida. I had a
question about just thinking about getting ahead of a story, like thinking of the worst case scenario of the story being used against you as Emmy, as you being the aggressor. Is there a way to, without risking your job, get information to see if this person has a history of any violent behavior, even going back to high school? Because it feels like sometimes when our community is involved in something, the media is, you know, ready with information of even something as minor as parking tickets. I'm just thinking about getting ahead of it because, as the previous caller suggested, emailing yourself documents because the job may not want to release it. They may be more inclined to try and protect the resident, even over their employee. You having information that states, you know, if this person has any history of even a high school suspension for fighting, that's something where if you were privy to that information and the story tried to get turned around on you, you could kind of get it out there on social media that you had documented this person has a history of violent behavior, and just using language where it's showing you're coming from a defensive standpoint, not as the aggressor, as in need of protection. So that's my only thing. I do think it's Black self-respect to figure out ways to definitely protect yourself and take on a posture where other people are aware that you're prepared to defend yourself, but also just trying to think, well, how can I make sure to get ahead of this story should it be used against me? So that was my comment.
I did try to search for him, but he has a very generic name, so I need a little bit more information from him. So I have been thinking of how to do that. Because the system that I have access to only gives me but so much information. And then I tried to Google him and stuff like that, but his name, like I said, is very generic. And so I need to find out what he does or whatever it is to pinpoint him a little bit more. But I'm going to be quite honest. I don't really want to get even to the point that I have to mace him. We don't have the same interactions that the other people who work as concierges have with him. And for the reasons that I mentioned earlier, I maintained absolute eye contact with him at all times. I don't smile. I'm not friendly. I'm not any of those things. And I think that keeps him from finding reasons to come and terrorize me. We don't talk. You know what I mean? He doesn't even know my name. He's the one where I developed the code where no matter what he says to me, there's only two things I say to him. He can say, "What's your name? How can I help you? Where are you from? Do you need something?" That's it. "Oh, it's a beautiful day outside. Do you need something? Oh, isn't my dog lovely? How can I help you?" Like, those are the only two things I've ever said to him. They're the only two things will ever say to him. So he's the one because he's like that. So we don't actually have, he doesn't have that leeway. So that's my first, defense. Those are my pawns. You know what I'm saying? Like, I didn't set that up so there's like a nice big buffer. But should he choose to penetrate that because he got drunk or had a bad day, that's when I'm amazing. That's another thing. 95 to 98% of the people that I deal with in my job are white who have been drinking. Let's say they are white who have been drinking. They're not creeping in the building at 4 o'clock in the morning sober. They're drunk or have been drinking or ingest some other drug. So I don't, you know, all of that, whatever. You know what I'm saying? I'm just going to get maced if you like do that because you don't know. You know what I mean? Like, there's nothing to say. It's too precarious. And there are no cameras right at the desk. There is no security officer. So sure, but I'll be there tomorrow. We'll be wrapping up the book and I'll be walking into work. So if I can find something on him, sure. But if he tries me at 1 o'clock on Saturday morning and I'm at work, you'll just get missed. But I do want to say thank you for all the great suggestions, though.
Oh, I wanted to add something as far as, since he has a generic name, I'm not sure if you know about like social engineering, how like people can get little pieces of information at a time, understand that he's going to be going back to work tomorrow or Saturday, but if there's a way of even overhearing him speak to somebody else, like just trying to get maybe some of his birth, and then eventually the day, and then the year, that can kind of just, I mean, you might have to get it at different times. Hopefully he doesn't, you know, try you before then, but that could just be one way, just trying to get little bits of information a little bit at a time.
Mm-hmm. I think that's great, just having very little to say in the workplace situation to whites, meaning we're not going to have any big monstrous, you know, long back and forth dialogue, just real short, right to the point. Other folks have commentary?
Yes. You know, listening to and participating in workplace racism really has informed me more so than anything, especially about the vulnerability of non-white black people on their jobs. And I would go even further and say, especially black females on their job. Wow. It's almost hard to give a suggestion, really. And it really identifies with the global system of racism, white supremacy, and its means of terrorizing us. The workplace is probably one of the most available environments for white people practicing racism on a daily basis. You know, in other words, they may love the job for what it is, and also love to be able to mistreat non-white black people, you know, on their job. You know, so I mean, but anyway, I can recall a similar situation. Black female, the wife of a close associate of mine, and we were also at the time was I would say less confused in my opinion. We were still out organizing when we were off duty, organizing within the community where we had an organization that was much like the Black Panthers. And his wife was having problems on the job, so he asked us to show up to his job in full regalia. Just imagine about 10, 15 black males, athletic looking, showing up at his wife's place of business, which is actually was a police station. You will look at us, you will know whether we're armed or not. But I would say this, it was kind of crazy to do it. Some would even say stupid. But one thing about it, his wife didn't have any more problems. If the problems were similar to what Miss Emmy was talking about, white males do that for fun. I'm not saying that he's not serious, but I'm saying that they do that for fun on their jobs, and because it's something that they know they can do and get away with. Wow, I'm learning, and this program is, believe me, is very important that we're able to call and participate and share and exchange views with one another. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Context of white supremacy, discussing workplace racism, hugely important in my view. I'm going to try and see if I can get these emails in because they have kind of piled as we've proceeded with the program, which is a grand email if you know, can't call in until justice@gmail.com. I also wanted to double check. I asked last week if anyone had counter racist suggestions regarding what words you would use in going about requesting an increase in compensation, what they would call a raise. And nobody had commentary. I don't know if that means people haven't thought out that code, but I'll ask again to see if people did any research. But getting to the rest of the commentary that I've not read with workplace racism. Black male. I've been having more problems on the job since the Trump election. I already had problems because I am very quiet on the job. I only have conversations pertaining to the task at hand. Of course, the white people on my job notice this. I've never bothered anyone on my job, so my workplace incidents kind of took me by surprise. I was in a work area completing my important task when a white female worker approached me. She said, "Everyone is asking, what are you working on over here?" I gave her a sort of weird look because everyone knows that I've been working on the same project for 6 months now. I replied, "I'm doing prep work to stay ahead." She then said, "Oh, I was trying to give you a heads up." This kind of made me upset because I figured that the white people on my job were talking about me behind my back, probably trying to get me fired. I documented the incident and notified my supervisor of what happened. Not talking on the job has caused issues for me. That is many, many black people. We've heard this consistently. I'm a big advocate. I think Roz, he has said consistently, just kind of saying that from the very beginning that, you know, I'm just not a big talker. You know, some people, they're gregarious. You know, they're going to be the loudest voice in the room. That's just not me. I'm here to work. I want to be a valuable member of the team and help us be the best organization that we can be. But I'm just not the chatty Kathy, or, you know, I'm just not going to be that person. And as long as you're courteous, and I've also said for some people where, you know, you feel like you're in one of those environments, you can even work out a code for that, where I've said you have specific things that you talk about. You ask questions. I'm a big advocate of that. You ask questions, and particularly ask questions where you're getting more information about the job. Ask questions about things that you don't understand about the job, where it can be we're conversing and I'm learning things about the environment I work, people that I work around. That way it is beneficial to you. It's not just a waste of time. So we can sit here and talk about, you know, who's going to win the French Open since Serena Williams is not going to be in it. You know, just wasting time talking about nonsense and giving them an opportunity to practice racism and study you. So we've talked about strategies to deal with that. And I still encourage, even with all of that, it's best to keep it quiet and just figure out your strategies to deal with, you know, them having difficulties or making it an issue because you don't speak, as opposed to you talking and talking and talking and talking and then having to deal with the ramifications of what you said or alleged to have said and that sort of thing. Just my view, United Independent. Other folks have commentary or suggestion, any suggestions for the person that wrote in? No suggestions?
I don't actually have a suggestion, but I do think that it was a fantastic observation to put the two together that you are being talked about. So I guess my only suggestion would be to just remain, you know, really observant and continue to take notes and just do your job. I think that, you know, I don't know if they're whites with power who are chit-chatting or just unilateral whites, like who are, you know, you're like your coworkers or equals or something like that, and they're just talking about you because you're not being friendly. But I've had similar situations because I've been practicing not being that bubbly, chatty person. So then you get talked about, and then someone says something like, "Oh, well, we didn't know you were," and it's like, "Who is this we?" And then you realize that everyone was talking about you. But unless they have any influence or power, so what? And then I'm a big proponent, fan of letting your work speak for itself, so that you don't have to, like, I think what you're doing is correct. I don't think that you should now start being friendly or start doing anything different. That's your code, and it's a really good one, and I think it's been proven to be effective. And then just keep taking your notes and make sure that you're doing your work. And hopefully they will find somebody else, not another non-white person, but, you know, somebody else to talk about. Because sometimes that's just what people do. They don't talk about other things. They just talk about people. So maybe you were the flavor of the week or something like that, and they can switch it up later. But just keep doing a good job at your job.
Hear, hear. Hear, hear. Any other suggestions recommendations for the person who wrote in, I guess having some difficulties maybe with being quiet on the job, and this white person, this white female saying that she's helping him out, coming up to ask him what he's doing or what he's working on.
Hi,
Chris. Oh, Stacy from the UK in with us. See if my math is all right. So it's 7:21, or excuse me, 3:21 a.m. Friday in London. Stacy ringing us in. Is it 3:21 a.m. for you?
It's 3:21.
Right on. Did you hear, I guess, have you heard what we've been talking about thus far? If you're just joining us, that's fine, too, if you want to take a moment to get acclimated. But if you've been listening, if you want to comment, that's fine, too.
Yeah, I did wake up to the tail end of Emmy discussing her situation, but I didn't hear the whole conversation. But I just wanted to respond to the person who's just saying the email that he's been talked about and asking about his work. I've had similar things done to me. But sometimes you look back at things in hindsight and think about the way you could have handled things differently. I wouldn't change the amount of interactions that he has with staff, because it sounds like this female is just trying to undermine him anyway. But what if he has team meetings with his colleagues? The team that I'm in, we do updates in our team meetings. I would suggest he does an update at the next team meeting on the project that he's working on, just as a way of bringing everyone up to speed on what he's working on. That way it kind of neutralizes neutralizes the attack. But those, you know, I wouldn't underestimate people walking around discussing you and your work. And she might even want his project and wants to take over it. But, I would just say, you know, if people are talking and suggesting that he's not doing any work, to do an update at the next team meeting, but be very shrewd about the amount of information you give over as well, because whites have all kinds of agendas sometimes in terms of why they're asking you about your particular projects as well. I'll mute my line.
Great commentary from Stacy in the UK. Friday already for her over there. Absolutely. Absolutely. Great point to keep in mind. I'm going to make sure I get all my emails in before the program wraps. So next email on the list. So this caller is adding on to the caller, and they were talking about whites surveilling and monitoring black people in work environments. Said, if you don't have decent phone, or tablet and can connect to the office Wi-Fi, you should always use a personal VPN on your own device. If you have to do personal stuff, do it on your device while cloaked over the office network. If you are in an area where restaurants or eating places offer free Wi-Fi, visit those places, get the passcodes, and if they are close to your workplace, use that. But have a VPN to protect you. You can also have TOR, which is a free VPN service, if you don't want to buy a VPN. But most services offer lifetime for $40. Just look up the TOR project. All black people should have at least one of these. I also cover my company provided laptop camera. Absolutely. I would encourage that. I will say that former FBI Director James Comey, before Trump fired him, he said if it would make you feel better, it might be a good idea to cover your laptop camera. This is recent. This is like within the last 6 months he said this, but the way that he said it, it almost sounded as if, you know, they probably got a million other means of, you know, spying and, you know, checking in on what you're doing, talking about, etc., which you should assume anyway, as long as the system of white supremacy exists. But absolutely, I would encourage that. And just the same thing that was said earlier, I think the female caller, about just not remembering these are not your devices, and remembering about that, the network as well, when you're at work, when you're logging on. Other folks have commentary. I still got other emails I need to get to as well, but other commentary or suggestions people want to add? Has anyone here ever asked for a raise? Wow, no one has asked for a raise. We should ask for a raise.
I did. Oh, okay. I have.
We got one. We got one.
And I'm sorry. I wasn't in last week's call, so I didn't know about the question. But I was very confused. And there's a whole story to that I might say like some other workplace racism time. But the short of it is with all of my experience and that I was a nationally certified pharmacy technician and all this good stuff, they were trying to pay me like a dollar and some change less than some white girl who only had like a high school diploma and no pharmacy experience whatsoever. And because I was snooping and I overheard that information, so when I went back, I just told them the truth that I would not be able to work for them unless I had an increase in my pay that was sufficient or like that matched my credentials and my work experience, just because I would hate to actually even start the job. This is before I began, but would hate to start the job because I wouldn't be able to work in integrity. I gave it some thought and it wouldn't work because it was like $4 decrease in what I had made in another situation. And that's what I said. And they said that they would talk with my corporate, and then they gave me the raise before I even began. But yeah, I told them that I wouldn't be able to continue. I wouldn't be able to provide them excellent service with that amount of money.
May I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
At first, when you asked the question last week, I actually forgot. But the only time, I guess, when I can somewhat say that I asked for a raise, it was when I was more confused, and I was basically, like someone else has said, I was just basically piggybacking off of what some white females in my same area were talking about, because they were the ones who were really pushing the raise. And I guess it was kind of surprising, because typically with whites, as we've all been discussing, they'll do that type of thing just directly with their supervisor or whomever they have contact with. But needless to say, it didn't work out to where we got a raise, or at least not all of us got a raise. But it wasn't me specifically. It was more like us asking as a group.
Gus?
Oh, yes, Emmy.
There was one other time recently in the corporate setting that I did also ask for a raise. This time I was still more confused than I am now, but a little less confused. And how I did it then was I had to actually fight for the list of my actual specified duties in my contract. But I retrieved those, and because I kept very copious notes of what I did all day, I was able to extrapolate my notes and say what I was actually doing, and then I presented it. And so what I did is I actually did do more than was outlined in my contract for a while. Property management got comfortable with it and enjoyed having all of these excess services. And then I presented, this is what you all are paying me to do. This is what I'm actually doing. If you want to continue to receive these services, I need adequate compensation. Because at the time I was like living in DC and it was very, very difficult. And I was like, I can't do all of this. So either we can keep my pay what it is, but this is what you're going to get, or we can increase my pay and I'll continue to provide you all of this extra. I did get the extra. It wasn't a whole lot. It wasn't what I wanted, but I did get a little bit.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
On my job, and I'm pretty sure all across at least the Northwestern Hemisphere on fire departments, it's the same. That primarily getting raises is something that takes place based on rank, based on your certification skills that you have. The closest to what I think is being talked about with pay raises is people in appointed positions. you can actually vie for an appointed position. That's never been my interest. But when I look at the job in itself, I think that's one reason why that white people have made it so difficult for non-white people, especially non-white black people, to have jobs like the fire department in certain places, because of that you don't even have to say anything based on you've taken that test and you've gotten promoted, that you're going to have X amount of dollars, that sort of thing. And so in a traditional sense of asking, quote unquote, the boss for a raise, that's almost, it's not existed. It doesn't happen a whole lot. Except for, in my mind, I'm thinking about appointed positions. That's different, and they are very sharp at denying non-white black people of those appointed positions also. And then if you get the appointed position, it's very easy to get that non-white person out of that position. I recall a non-white black male who was appointed as a chief, and they waited good until he went to a quote-unquote black firefighters convention and didn't come back fast enough for I think it was Hurricane Andrew, didn't come back fast enough. And in turn, there was two black males who were chiefs that they demoted because of them not following quote unquote procedure. You know, one of those technical things that they would impose upon you. They didn't follow procedure properly on coming back in due time when Hurricane Andrew took place down here in South Florida. But for the most part, you take a test, get promoted, or a certain amount of years that you're on in a position, they have to give you a pay raise. Even in my retired state, I get, you know, pay raise. Even if you're not even a member of the union, you get a pay raise. So, like I said, I think that's one reason why white people fight so hard, that non-white people don't get jobs of this nature. That's it.
Absolutely. And that's all across this area of the world, the U.S., where they do not allow black people to get those jobs. And I mean, though, you talk about quality jobs with pension and all that, everything, increase in salary, and all that good stuff. Man,
yes,
they have done a brilliant job in keeping black people from getting that type of quality employment.
And I would tell you, the retired firefighter was not supposed to be a retired firefighter. I wasn't supposed to make it this far. That's it.
Absolutely. See, we made that point earlier in the program that you are going to have, like I think it was Emmy, she said that the lock-wearing race soldier was deliberately sabotaging their slides. Like, that's what you're going to deal with in the workplace. And I was not informed. Again, this is not a session to mope and cry. This is just being honest that this is what you're going to be dealing with in the workplace. So you want to be prepared to try to neutralize this as best we can. We got about 30 minutes left. If folks have other commentary that they need to get in before we wrap things up, you should do so quickly. We had one of our black female listeners. She wanted to say that she's working now, but she appreciated the chance to be able to dial in. She had an issue where a white woman was unwanted touching, molesting her on the job, and she was able to chime in and get some suggestions. Folks have any other comments that they wanted to get in about what's been shared, comments, observations? Mr. Steele, did you have a comment you wanted to get in as well? Saw you had a hand up. Maybe he's just listening or not in an area where he can speak presently. I forgot, our caller in the Bay Area, young listener, he dials in regularly. He, too, is in school. He said, in my history class, we are learning about World War II and how Nazi Germany was involved in it yesterday. We were reading an article about how little German children identify a Jew. I noticed that some of the features described were always to those of black people: broad six-figure nose, darker skin color, droopy ears, dark and curly hair, and much more. I later learned from one of my friends that the Germans went to Northern Africa and murdered a ton of black people, apparently for no particular reason. This is what helped me further realize that the Germans killed the Jews because they looked nothing like them, but more like black people, so they were considered evil. Our young listener, 16 years old, young scholar in the Bay Area. Again, I look at the classroom as work. That's kindergarten to, you know, post-grad. That is, you know, I lump all that in with work. Any other commentary folks wanted to make sure they get in? Stacy, did you have any other commentary you wanted to add? You've been with us long enough now.
Hi, Gus. Hi, everyone. I asked a question at the tail end of last week's program about staff networks, networks for black staff. And I was just interested if anybody had had a chance to think about that, or if any of the callers had similar networks in their organizations, and how productive, constructive they've been, in ways in which they've made those or ensured that those networks are constructive. And before I in my line, I went to a conference earlier this week. Might have been at the end of last week actually. Around networks. Specifically how racism in the workplace and how black women are identifying racism that they're facing in the UK. And there were some interesting stats, actually. It's from a report that's been released. I haven't read the whole report, but it was part of the presentation. And two stats that stood out: 70%. They asked the question in a survey around racial bias to establish how much bias there is, and then which groups are showing most racial bias. And the stat was that 70% of young people in the workplace were shown to have some level of racial bias, and that was the highest percentage in terms of the age ranges who came out highest. And the analysis is that, you know, we make assumptions that, you know, if once the older generation dies out, that racism will disappear, and that is saying quite the opposite. And the second step is that over a 5-year period, 21,000 senior managers, black minority ethnic managers, have disappeared from the workforce. And that's just senior managers over a 5-year period. So, which was actually, you know, really interesting. I don't know what percentage of the workforce that is as a whole, but certainly they're specifically talking about senior managers. So, you know, the analysis there being that progression, and also so progression in the workplace, is being hampered by racial bias. I'll mute my line, Gus.
I remember that from last week. Do we have any folks who have any experience with black staffing? Any folks with experience with that? I know I do not. Any folks, any experience with that?
You said, what did you say?
Black staffing, having like an employment staffing service that's specifically geared towards black people.
Well, Gus, it would be staff networks.
Staff networks.
Yeah, so for example, you know, most organisations that I include in that I work for have LGBT network.
Of course.
We have a women's network. And those two networks seem to be operating fine. Or rather, there's no contention about that. But it seems to be quite contentious having a VME network, and we were having discussions about whether it should be black and minority ethnic or black only. And so at the moment, there's conversations around whether or not there should even be such a network. And I guess beyond that conversation of should there be one, if there was one, how would it be, you know, how do you ensure it's constructive? But I should also say I did really appreciate Ken Steele's comments last week around recruitment agencies and looking at their model and structure, specifically black-run recruitment agencies that specialise in black staff, and looking at that model, because I thought it was really useful, actually. I'll mute my line, Gus.
Appreciate the extra insight. I know, did retired firefighter, were you going to respond? I know you wanted clarification. Maybe he just wanted clarification. Maybe that was all. So do we have anyone who...
Oh, I just took myself off mute. I was doing something that would have made some noise.
I see.
No, I'm not really... familiar with it from what I gather. No.
I see. I also...
May I see?
Yes, ma'am.
I'm sorry. My only suggestion, because I'm not necessarily familiar with necessarily staffing networks. I have heard of a black investment. I didn't necessarily call it a network, but it was a group. And then, of course, when white people found out about it, they shut it down, or they got it shut down. So my only thought, because I feel like with these whole other movements, I guess if you want to call them that, or people have been calling them that, like the LGBT whatever and the women's, they can kind of hide under this cloak of, oh, we're all inclusive, when more often than not, you still have whites at the top of the management or the top of these networks. Wondering if there's a way to how whites do, they make things specifically for them without necessarily coding it as, oh, this is whites only. So just very being somehow targeting just black women without saying, okay, well, this is just a black women's staffing network.
Interesting. What do you think about that, Stacey?
Yeah, I think there are times when that approach is definitely a good way to go. I think because of where we are in terms of the conversations that have already taken place, it is already being discussed as a black or BME network. So those, and to be honest, I wasn't steering that. This came from one of the group directors. So to a certain extent, it is something which is being looked at senior level, but it's still at conversation stage, should such a thing exist. So there is a senior level of buy-in. So I guess at this stage for me, it would be, is it constructive and how do you ensure it's constructive? And part of it as well is whether or not I even want to be involved in the thing on my own personal level. Fair enough. If you don't have that sort of things, such networks in the United States, it might be quite different. But yeah, I was just inquiring, really. I'll mute my line, Gus.
Last few minutes of the broadcast. Again, I'm not surprised at all that the LGBT anywhere in the world have great resources for employment or any other networking opportunities that they need. Any other comments, observations? Folks want to make sure they get in before we conclude. We have a second to last study session on Coretta Scott King's autobiography, My Life, My Love, My Legacy. That's tomorrow, same broadcast time, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Any other commentary? Folks want to make sure they get in.
I would say the closest thing from my experience to this term that's called black staffing, based on what I think I've heard, is with Dade County Fire Department. There was an organization, one of your guests, Charles Phillips, he was one of the founders of this organization called the Progressive Firefighters Association. And I would say all over this part of the world, with especially the large fire departments in the Northwestern Hemisphere, there is some sort of quote-unquote black organized effort. Primarily, what they do is they are attempting to be watchful for entry-level hiring and quote-unquote promotion. Maybe if some conditions that that are quote-unquote obvious, that of mistreatment of non-white black people, that they basically go to the people in charge and ask that they not mistreat us in that way. I can recall that myself and a few other associates attempted to offer to this group to become more visible to the quote-unquote black community, black area, black people in itself, and they grew very afraid of that concept because it would make them rival with the union, which is code for, you know, powerful white people. And they turned it down back many, many years ago. But that's the closest thing that I've experienced to what I'm hearing. Thank you.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. I was going to comment on the young scholar from the Bay Area, what he had written in about Nazi Germany and them killing the quote-unquote Jews, because
that's not really workplace racism. That's not really workplace racism.
Oh, it's not. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm sorry.
He's just sharing an observation from the classroom. That was the only reason that I read. But yeah, that's not really workplace racism.
Yes, sir.
Compensatory call-in this Saturday, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. Feel free. That'll be one you can get in for this coming weekend, so we can get details on that. Anything else? Workplace racism commentary? Are folks satisfied for the evening? I will assume folks are good. Make sure we are documenting. Let me double check, make sure I didn't miss anyone. Yeah, oh, I did miss someone. The caller is 6900. Sorry about that. I didn't have the switchboard immediately in front of me.
Greetings, Gus. Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Greetings, Gus. Greetings to the callers and the listeners. This is Jay out of New York. Sorry for the late dial-in. I was actually traveling from the city, so I didn't want the background noise. I was listening to the question that Stacey from the UK had posed in reference to diversity networks. I actually worked as a diversity specialist for one of the larger companies, probably in the early 2000s, and we ran very detailed groups just like the ones that Stacey's referencing. And we had a number of groups. So there were the Black Network. It was a Black Network organization. There was a female network organization. At that time, we were doing a lot of H-1B visas. So we had a lot of East Asians, and they started their own group. The only problem that I saw with all of those networks, especially the Black Network group, is that there was a report that needed to be done at the end of each meeting, because you have to keep in mind it's on work time. So at the end, the individual, the white people within the organization, want a report on what you all are doing on work time. So once you started gravitating towards what's wrong, what's happening within the organization, there would be a white person that would come into the meeting and try and facilitate, answer questions and things of that nature. And for me, that used to take the productivity and the constructiveness of the meetings right out of the door, because they would take that, and I felt that they were actually strategizing and just refining the things that they were doing after each meeting of some of the gripes or programs that we came up with, talking about they didn't have enough funds. So I just find that anything that's done in a constructive effort, especially because it's on work time and all the reports had to go right back into the usual suspects, that they utilize that against us. But groups that they wanted to be highlighted, like the East Asian groups, they would have tons of programs for the quote-unquote Hispanic groups, but we always found our way kind of at the bottom in reference to the things that we needed outside of the programs that they were getting benefits for, like the Black engineers, where we would go and, you know, recruit people from. If it was staffing and recruiting, we would get all the funding. But if it was anything in reference to going out in the community, doing any type of work that was constructive on the next level, that seemed to always get put on a back burner for, as Dr. Welsing would say it, the blacker in tone, the less resources there are kind of on a global scale. So that's probably the closest that I could get, but I definitely just wanted to interject on that. Hopefully that was helpful. I'll mute my line.
Wow. Appreciate that. Coretta Scott King said the same thing. In her book, On a Global Scale, she said that was what she observed. The darker you are, the more melanin you have, the tougher it was to get resources. She made that same observation. We talked about that last week. My Life, My Love, My Legacy, coming up tomorrow, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. We had a first-time caller today, too. Did we miss anybody? Anybody else have commentary that they wanted to get in that I overlooked or missed? Any other comments, questions they wanted to get in? Everyone satisfied? Oh, yes, sir. We can hear you.
I just want to make one quick comment on another observation. We've had this older white man been coming in, I guess, to look up records on a black cemetery or something like that. And he liked to go off into a tangent on different events in history, because I guess, you know, they couldn't bury black people around, I guess, white people or something like that. And he was saying a whole bunch of different, you know, stories about how black people would be, you know, told they couldn't go to different swimming pools, and how white people are going to get like drums of acid and pour it into the swimming pools and stuff. And he, the person that was helping him was a black female. So she was like, while she was trying to help him find the records or whatever, you know, he talking about these different events, you know, about Tulsa, Oklahoma, and how they had a black area or something like that. The Black Wall Street. And, you know, she was just like, it seemed like she was trying to listen to what he was saying, but, you know, it seemed like he just wanted to just come in and just talk about all this kind of stuff and not really focus on what he's trying to look for. You know, he's saying that his great grandparents, I guess, owned slaves and stuff like that, and you know, and she was confused, so she was saying, "Well, you know, I'm glad that you're not like that." So, you know, he mentioned in the KKK and a whole bunch of different things. So, the other black female, she pretty much got in a debate with him the last time before he came in. So, yeah, this guy, he'll come in every now and then, and he brought in flowers for the other lady that's in there, but she wasn't there that day he came back in. So, yeah, I just wanted to bring that up, and that's all I have.
White people are not ignorant about racism at all. I'm sure it's a lot of white people who could, you know, recount and go back and give out all kinds of details like that about what they used to do or what their great grandpappies and grandmothers used to do to the Negroes. Yeah, lots of whites could, you know, hours and hours and hours going over all that detail. With that, unless we miss anybody else, anything final they wanted to get in before we conclude? Grand. We will be here tomorrow. Coretta Scott King, My Life, My Love, My Legacy, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. I hope it has been a constructive investment of your Thursday evening. You can always write in untiljustice@gmail.com. If you have workplace issues that you want to share, get commentary. And as always, update us, right? Like, if you let us know about a situation, if you take some of the suggestions, if you don't, just let us know how it goes, because that helps us get a better understanding of what strategies work, what strategies don't work, maybe some terms to use, words to use, that sort of thing. It can be very, very helpful to just kind of let us know how things evolve. With that, thanks again for everyone who participated. Hope it's worthy of your time and energy. I will state, sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy. Race soldiers, they do all that they possibly can to terrorize and abuse black people. The Daniel Holtzclaws and Darren Wilsons of the world abound. You do not want to make their job easier by being under the influence, alcohol, tobacco, cannabis, any other poisons, toxins that racists concoct, all of that stuff. The evidence shows it abounds that when we are under these substances, it generally just makes it a lot easier for us to be terrorized and abused. Racists, they already have enough advantages. We want to do everything we can to protect our brain computer so that we can come up with solutions, permanent solutions to the problem, the system of white supremacy. With that, Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cal signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim,
your
brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
Shut I'm a up. Victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.